This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! What a great run! He's in trouble. He is dropped. Kyle Williams dropped it. Oh, baby, what a hit. Tyrod looks. Tyrod on the run. Nobody in front of him. Touchdown! There's T-Mobile.
He gonna come through.
Sammy in the end zone. Got it! Got it! Touchdown! Sammy Watkins, touchdown, Buffalo! McCoy, touch to the right. Outrunning everybody. 10, 5, touchdown! Touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
Hello there. Welcome to the show, the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. It is Wednesday, March 29th, month of March coming to a close. John Murphy, Donald Jones here in our One Buffalo studio at Orchard Park, New York. Donald, good afternoon. Can you believe March is almost over? Feels like we just got going.
I know, but I'm looking forward to April. Hopefully we just keep going up in terms of temperature.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, we're all right with weather now, right? You don't have any issues with this,
No,
do
I
you?
Think we're okay right now.
Seasonal.
My only issue right now is, you know, it's like once a week my computer tries to act funny on me, you know?
Right out here?
Right out here. As soon as we get on set, it acts funny.
That's Nobody believes me when I say it, but maybe they'll believe you.
Maybe.
All right, we got some stuff to do today, a lot to do, actually. A lot to talk about, a lot to hear from, including Terry Pegula, Bill's owner, who was talking to the media last night in Arizona, Scottsdale, Arizona, the site of the NFL owners' meetings. The Bills owner addressed a variety of topics. We will hear his entire interview, his session with the media, coming up in just a couple of minutes or so. We're going to bounce some stuff off that and talk about some of those issues, and we want to hear from you on that. Sean McDermott, you know, he spoke for an hour and a half. I think it was an hour and a half. It was about an hour, I guess, yesterday at the owners' meetings, and we dealt with some of the issues yesterday. We've got more to deal with today, and we'll hear some of those sound bites coming up on the show as well today and get your thoughts on some of that. Coming up at 1 o'clock, Jamie Eisenberg, who is a lead NFL fantasy football writer for CBSSports.com. Jamie Eisenberg was at the owners' meetings as well, and we'll get his take on what he ran across there, and in particular, some of the implications for fantasy football owners, including his take on Sammy Watkins and what sort of a fantasy prospect Sammy Watkins might be. So Jamie Eisenberg joins us at 1 o'clock. And maybe more. We might have Scott Crichton, the new Bills defensive lineman, just signed to a contract earlier this week. He may be with us today, depending on his schedule. He's doing physicals, et cetera, as he makes his way through One Bills Drive, and maybe we get him on the show. So that's the lineup. We'll do fake news, real news, the wildly popular fake news, real news coming up today. We got a couple of issues with that.
We do.
Is it just popular with us, do you think, or is anybody else tuned into that?
I think there's a lot of people tuned into that all across the country. So I think it's a good thing that we're doing fake news and real news.
There's a crowd.
It's really just fake news that everybody talks about. They don't do real news anymore.
Right.
That doesn't even exist.
Like that. Okay. So fake news, real news coming up on the show today. Comments from yesterday when the owners' meetings wrapped up. Commissioner Roger Goodell had some comments on some of the issues. And Dean Blandino, the NFL's vice president of officiating, had some thoughts on that as well. So all of that coming up on the show today. Some of that sound from the owners' meetings in Arizona and a couple of the guests that we'll have here on the show today. And let's start with some of those owners' meetings. You know, when you look at the big picture of what went down as far as rules changes, Donald, it seems to me the biggest change is the implementation of replay. You know, it's no longer under the hood. I don't think anybody's going to miss it going under the hood. Do you?
I don't know. People will probably start to miss it if there's, like, a lot of mistakes being made.
Yeah.
If you start to have so many mistakes being made, it's like, you know what, just go back to the old way we did it. That's probably the only reason why people would hate it. I don't know how much time it's going to shave off the game. If you would even notice as a fan watching the game, if you're in the stadium or if you're at home watching on TV. So I don't know. I don't know how much of a difference it's
going
to make.
And of course, the biggest – it's not just not going under the hood. It's that the replay itself will be centralized in New York City. So no longer will that official on the field, whether it's Gene Steratore or Walt Coleman, Walt Anderson, no longer will he look at the video and make a decision on what he saw. Instead, it'll be Dean Blandino and his crew in New York City. So they've taken it right out of the hands of the officials on the field. You know, I wonder how the officials, and in particular the officials union, the officials association, feels about that. They clearly are taking it out of their hands. Maybe they like it. Maybe they think it's a step forward not to have that in the hands of the officials. Looking at the replay, going under the hood, all that's involved there. Maybe, But it's a change, and it's designed, I think, to standardize what goes on and replay reviews, maybe speed up the process a little bit, you know, get away from the I guess it never bothered me too much, but the look, I guess, of an official going into a booth on the sidelines, like an old, you know, photo booth that you'd see at the Erie County Fair or something. You know, go under there and come out with a decision. I think they wanted to get away from that, and that's what this will do.
Now, when you hear Roger Goodell say, we want to take things like that out of the hands of the officials, you see them come down with something like this where they're going to make it centralized coming from New York. Do you think, and when we talk about making this a full-time thing as far as officials go, making full-time officials, do you think that this is like the alternative for them making full-time officials? Like, do you think they're like, no, this is what we're going to do instead of going with full-time officials?
No, although I don't, and I have the I know that they did not approve full-time officials at these meetings, but I do think that's in the future. In fact, they have some officials who are full-time. I do think that's a direction they're going to eventually get to. They're probably, I would guess, waiting for some of the current officials to age out, be ready to retire, and replace them with full-time officials. So I don't think this is, are you saying, is it a way to skirt hiring officials full-time? No, I don't think so.
You don't think so?
No, I don't think so, because I think they know, they have the money, they have a desire to get full-time officials. I think they know that that's a necessary step. But that's, again, they didn't do it when they could have done it this week in Arizona.
Well, it's gonna keep on coming up.
Yeah.
You know, every single season you're going to have horrible calls. And it's going to keep – that argument is going to keep on creeping up, and everybody's going to say we need to make this a full-time thing. At some point, just like the Oakland relocation, the owners probably just got tired of it because it kept on coming across their desks. And now this whole full-time official thing is going to keep on coming up every single owner's meeting. And at some point, they're going to say, you know what? Just make this a full-time thing. Yeah,
they should. They have the money, to be sure. All right, so at the conclusion of the session last night, and today in Arizona, they just had NFC coaches breakfast meeting with media, but – last night in Arizona, Bills owner Terry Pegula had a chance to meet with some of the media assembled there. Our own Mike Adamack was there with the camera and recorded his thoughts. Terry Pegula, the Bills owner, we're going to play it for you now. It's about 7 minutes or so. Terry Pegula kind of summarizing the meetings, talking about where the Bills stand. Stadium issues came up, and he talked about the relationship between his coach, Sean McDermott, and his general manager, Doug Whaley. All of that from Terry Pegula, his comments last night at the NFL owners meetings in Arizona.
We talked about a lot of important issues, moved forward on many of them, some we can't talk about publicly, but meeting went well.
There has been a lot of discussion about Doug Whaley's future and questions maybe about whether he's going to be a board for the long term here. Can you address his status with the team, Terry, and where you what do you make of that speculation?
Is this in regard to some of the stories about Doug and Sean?
Yes, CBS.
Yeah. Well, we just spent the afternoon working together, the three of us. Those guys get along great. They've been making some key decisions, and they work well together.
When it comes time to make that pick at number 10 in the draft in a few weeks, whose final call will that be?
It's going to be a group effort.
Is that something where you throw out the draft, every single pick will be a group consensus, or is it Doug making the final decision because he controls the 53? What would be the most accurate way to describe that?
I think the answer I just gave you of obviously, when I say it's a group effort, it's just like everything else I think that most businesses do in their life. If somebody feels more strongly about something than somebody else, then maybe you lean in that direction, you know.
And Terry, Sean has talked about the one voice approach. Can you give us some background on your thoughts and the philosophy behind wanting to go this way? I assume maybe this was a decision made once when you hired Sean in January.
Well, it's a lot simpler to have one spokesperson for the organization. And when we sat in our coaching interviews this last go-around, we talked to all the candidates, and one of the things we were interested in, and Doug was in those meetings, is we wanted a coach who could be the face of our organization and that, you know, could step into that role.
Terry, I'm curious. Ralph was famous for being the guy that would vote against relocation. I was curious where you stood on the Raiders and the Rams and the Chargers, and if you could walk us through your reasoning on that.
Well, the Raiders vote was it 31-1?
Yeah.
I didn't vote against it, so I guess you know where I stood. It's an issue that it's a difficult issue because I know that the fans in Buffalo went through some hardship mentally, wondering what was going to happen to their franchise. So, but you know, these things happen.
Another portion of that CBS report regarding Doug and Sean was that Sean might want to bring in new members of the front office for salary cap personnel purposes. How open would you be to that happening?
I don't know where that report came from. It's erroneous.
A year ago at the meeting in Boca, multiple owners said to me, you know, they thought there was an urgent need for the Bills to get a new stadium. Roger Goodell has expressed that publicly, etc. But over the course of a year, when I revisited that topic at this meeting, there seemed to be a softening of that stance from the people with whom I spoke in the league. And one went as far as to say that, you know, in speaking with you and I guess Kim, the feeling was, hey, give us an opportunity to get some success before we ask for things like public money, obviously. That was what was relayed from them. Can you give a sense of what where your position is on that, on the state?
Yes. The state just got through with a rather expensive renovation on the stadium. I don't think it's our place to make demands and ask for things right now. We have a lease on our stadium till 2023, and you know, we're looking forward to the football season and not talking about stadiums.
Terry, has the NFL still made it clear that they would like a new facility for the Buffalo Bills? Maybe not immediately after that lease is done, but sometime in the near future?
That hasn't been discussed in any kind of detail. Everybody knows we're new owners. We're a smaller market in the league, so we just need to be happy with what we have right now in our stadium and
Sean,
call it home.
Sorry, Sean, your impressions of the first few months that he's been on the job. Some of your observations and impressions of his work.
Hard worker, dedicated, people person, high character. He's everything we thought he would be when we interviewed him.
One more on the stadium, if I could. Would you be open to building a stadium without public money, or is that something that would probably require that type?
Let me make it clear that when I bought the Bills, I said, I don't want to be talking about a stadium for the next 9 years. So I haven't thought about any of that stuff.
Tyrod Taylor gets a restructured contract to stick around. Can you weigh in what your perspective was on that?
That was Doug and Sean working very diligently, digging up everything, directions we could go and whatnot. And the decision was unanimous that we bring Tyrod back with the new contract. And we're all happy with that.
Terry, what has been the hardest part of being an NFL owner 2 years in?
I think the hardest part has been our fans not having a winner. It's very difficult. We're not happy with what we've been doing on the field. We need to get better. We're going to work harder. And the whole organization is behind that philosophy. Work harder day by day, week by week, Sunday by Sunday, and just try to get better.
Were you aware of a comment that Rex Ryan made to the New York Daily News? This was around the Super Bowl time, this past Super Bowl. Words to the effect that, you know, he's collecting his money from you. And was basically putting it in your face as an organization, you individually, but you as an organization. If you're aware of that, what was your reaction to it?
I'm not aware of it, and that's all in the past. We're we're full speed ahead this season, one day at a time, Vic. You know, that's the way we have to look at it.
Bills owner Terry Pegula, his entire comments to the media last night at the NFL's owners' meetings in Arizona. Our man Mike Adamek out there to get that for us. And interesting comments. Let me start with the last thing first, Donald. I vaguely remember Rex Ryan's comment. I remember at the Super Bowl reading on my phone about Rex said something to the New York Daily News, I believe, about Buffalo. But was he putting it in anybody's face? I didn't interpret it as that. It was kind of like Rex's spin on...
It's kind of his spin on how things went down and how he felt at the time.
Yeah.
I don't know if he was putting it in their faces.
It makes sense to me that Terry didn't see it that way either. But a couple of things on this Pegula's comments.
I'm sure Terry just wants to put that stuff behind him. He's like, listen, I don't want to talk about that. We just want to win.
Yeah.
Like, ultimately, that's all that matters. We win, and Rex Ryan and all that stuff wouldn't even matter. So...
You know what else? I got this serious vibe from Terry Pegula that the other thing he wants to put behind him is the notion that Doug Whaley doesn't get along with Sean McDermott.
Yeah.
And I think he did that pretty effectively. I really do. If you look at some of his comments on the Jason Lockonfora report about Whaley and McDermott not getting along, and Pegula said they just spent the afternoon working together, the three of us. Those guys get along great. They've been making some key decisions. And there was a further question when Terry was asked. Part of that CBS report said that Doug and that Sean might want to bring in some new members of the front office for salary cap personnel purposes. How open would you be to that happening? And point blank, Terry Pegula says, I don't know where that report came from. It's erroneous. Mm-hmm. It can't be much more clear than that. It's erroneous, he said. It's not, I won't comment, no comment. I don't know about that. He said it's erroneous. It's wrong. Now, I'm sure Lockonfora has sources. I'm sure he talks to somebody who he believes has an inside track. Mm-hmm. But the owner says flat out it's wrong. It's erroneous. And I've said this. You're going to think I'm a broken record here. So the one report is Lockonfora does his thing and reports, and he's been right sometimes. He's been wrong sometimes, way wrong, including on Tyrod Taylor and on Anthony Lynn going back just a couple of months ago. But the real damage, I think, is done when that report – on CBSSports.com is picked up and recycled and recirculated and believed to be true and reported as true. And you know what? It'll come up again.
It will.
Like, watch. When the Bills lose a couple of games this regular season,
I'm guessing
they're going to lose a couple at least, it will come up. Well, as was reported back in March, the general manager and the coach don't get along, don't work well together. It's a marriage that's not built to last. Yeah, it was reported, and the owner says it's wrong, but it won't go away. I think that's the unfortunate part, that even reporters who cover this team recirculate it, recycle it as if it were true when, they should develop their own sources, their own information on what's true and what's not. I feel pretty strongly about this, which is why I wanted to bring it up again. I promise I won't talk about it anymore. You're sick of me saying this, but look, the owner says it's erroneous, it's wrong. And I hope that puts an end to it. I fear it will not, because that report, I have a feeling, is, it's like a vampire. You got to drive a stake through the heart of it before it's dead.
I mean,
along with several other reports.
Ultimately, I feel like Terry Pegula just wants to win, and winning will silence all of this stuff. But like you said, they're not going to win every single game. Even if they went and had a crazy run this season, they're not going to win every single game. I feel like the first game that they lose, especially if it's early in the season, let's just say they lost the first game of the season, this right here is going to come back up right away. Like, the first game, I feel like this is what people are going to talk about. They're going to watch every single thing that they do during camp. Every single interaction that Doug and Coach McDermott have, it's going to be scrutinized. This is something that's not going to go away until the team goes into the playoffs. And then maybe then it'll be silenced. But I don't even know about it then.
And look, nobody's job is guaranteed here,
right,
including ours. But Doug Whaley doesn't have a lifetime contract. Coach McDermott doesn't have a lifetime contract.
Right.
So, I just think we're at the early stages, like two and a half months into their relationship. I think they deserve the benefit of the doubt, quite frankly. And I think when the owner specifically says that it's erroneous, then you pretty much have to take him at his word. A couple of other things on the stadium, question about other NFL owners pushing for a new facility for the Bills. And again, Pegula said point blank, that has not been discussed in any kind of detail. Everyone knows we're new owners. We need to be happy with what we have at our stadium and call it home. Take him on his word on that too. I don't know how much pressure there was a year ago and how much that has changed from a year till now. But as the owner said, it's really not – it certainly wasn't on the formal agenda. Wasn't on an informal agenda. Who knows, right? I think they were probably preoccupied, the owners were, with the Raiders move as opposed to the Buffalo situation.
Yeah, I would think it was all about the Raiders. I mean, yesterday was big, big-time Raiders stuff. And then the other rules that came down. But I think they were really preoccupied with the Raiders move, and then that became a crazy story over the last couple of days. So I think this right here was a really non-issue.
And there was one more notable thing that Terry Pegula said, which got me thinking about last summer. I can't remember if you were with us that day at training camp. Were you there when Terry Pegula was on the show? You may not have been.
No, I wasn't there.
And he said something about somebody, I guess we asked about the playoff drought, at then 16-year playoff drought, and he pointed out that under his stewardship, it's 2 years, which is accurate. Mm-hmm. But he took some heat for that in some quarters for, you know, not acknowledging the prior 15-year playoff drought. Today or yesterday in his comments, I thought Terry Pegula said an interesting thing about that. He was asked, what's been the hardest part about being an NFL owner? And he said, the hardest part has been our fans not having a winner. He went on to say, it's difficult. You just heard him say this. Mm-hmm. Not happy with what we've been doing on the field. We need to get better. We're going to work harder. The whole organization is behind that philosophy. So if you were worried last August when Terry was on the show with us that maybe he did not feel your pain as a Bills fan, there's evidence, there's a quote anyway, that you can hang your hat on. Yes, he does. Hardest part about being an owner is not getting up to speed on the finances and not juggling two teams at once, not any other thing that might be difficult about being an NFL owner. According to Terry Pegula yesterday, the hardest part about being an owner of this Bills team is the disappointment felt by the fans, not producing a winner. That means something, I think. Look, you don't have to accept everything he says, but when he says it, whether he says a report is erroneous or the hardest part to me is not producing a fan, our fans, our winner for our fans, you have to at least acknowledge that he said it and take it at face value, I think.
I mean, these people, athletes, coaches, the owners, the GMs, they are like some of the most competitive people in the world, you know, and he only has had the team for 2 years. So even if he says, you know, that prior 15 years, I've only had the team for 2 years. Well, he hasn't won in those 2 years, and so he feels that. He's like, listen, I want to win. Like, I didn't just buy the team just to buy the team. I want to give this city a winner, and he feels that. When he's not winning, he wants to get it corrected because he is competitive, which is why he's so successful in business, because he is that competitive. And so I think, you know, he definitely feels what everybody feels in just his 2 years as an owner, even though he's owned, you know, he's had the Sabres, he's had the ties to Buffalo. He's only had the team for 2 years, but he hasn't won yet, and I think he feels that.
All right, so that's Terry Pegula. That's what he said last night at the owners' meetings. We'll take your calls on any of that or anything we've said. Phone lines are open, as they are every day here in the show, 803-0550. Toll free from outside Buffalo, 1-888-552-550. Or you can do it via Twitter at John Murphy Show. We have a Twitter poll up as well, and that deals with more football-related. And this goes back to Sean McDermott's comments from yesterday. We heard it a lot. We played it a lot yesterday. Coach McDermott said, the number two wide receiver is on the roster. The number two receiver, he said, is on the roster right now. Who do you think that is? Who's he thinking of? That's our Twitter poll. It is up right now. We've got close to 500 votes cast so far. Coach McDermott says the Bills' number two receiver is currently on the roster. Not going to be a free agent pickup, not going to be a draft pick. Who do you think he's referring to? With close to 500 votes in so far, 44% of you say Andre Holmes, just signed a couple of weeks ago. 26% of you say the tight end, Charles Clay. Donald put that forth for us yesterday. Mm-hmm. 15% say Colby Listenbe, the speedster, last year's draft pick who never played it down. 15% say somebody else they have in mind. Let us know what you think. You can tweet it in. You can phone it in at 803-0550. Sean McDermott says the Bills' number two receiver is on the roster right now. Who do you think he has in mind? A couple of tweets. Chris tweeted in, hopefully he said this because he doesn't want the league to know he's drafting a wide receiver at 10. There is not a number two on the team. That was my take yesterday, that it's kind of a draft smokescreen.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
I mean, for me, I understand that. I think, once again, you don't know what you're getting when you draft these rookies. So you can draft one first overall, but guess what? He can get into camp and really be horrible once he gets to camp. It just can't make that transition. So are you going to say he's your number two still, even though he sucks in practice? No, I don't think you're going to do that. So I think he's always, and he said this yesterday, he's always going to hope that the guys that are already on his roster that have already played in this league can emerge and take over that position. For me, I feel like with him coming up from Carolina, coming from a team that had Greg Olsen, seeing what that tight end did for that team and the plays that he can make, I would think that he looks at Charles Clay and says, this guy can make plays for us down the field. So when we talk about the number two wide receiver, you know, even you look at the Patriots, their number one wide receiver is Rob Gronkowski. You know, he really is their number one wide receiver. It doesn't just mean the wide receiver position. We're talking about who is getting the most targets. That person is the number one and the number two wide receiver. For me, right now, he looks at it, and I would think it's going to be Sammy Watkins is number one. I think Charles Clay, they're going to really get involved in the offense. And then I look at a guy like Andre Holmes to be like the number three in terms of targets.
A couple of calls. Steve calling from Williamsville. Hello, Steve. Welcome to the show. You're on the air with us.
How you doing? I'm a longtime fan, and I love listening to you guys.
Thank you.
Just a question. I heard on Facebook that the Bills were interested in signing Michael Floyd. It's the first time I've heard about it, and I just want to know if you heard anything about it, and if so, what is your take on that?
Steve, help me out with this, because this is just my ignorance here. When you say I heard on Facebook, who produces that content? Who writes that on Facebook? Just a guy?
I believe it was Bills Mafia.
Oh, yeah.
Is that a person? What I know. So it's a fan group writes that? What? I don't. Help me out. I'm not trying to be obtuse here.
I have no clue who the journalist was. Yeah. I just seen on Facebook that Bills Mafia had posted that the Bills were interested in signing Michael Floyd. First time I heard about it, and I just
first
didn't
I've
know.
First I've heard about it.
Yeah, that's the first I've heard about it as well. I mean, Michael Floyd showed some flashes of being a good wide receiver out in Arizona, but, you know, he has serious issues that I think he still has to go through court for. I'm not sure exactly where he is in that whole situation, so I don't know if they want to take on that baggage. I think the next receiver coming on this roster will be through the draft. Mm-hmm. I truly believe that.
There's a call from Charlie. Hello, Charlie. Welcome. You're on the air with us.
Well, good afternoon, guys. I should say good morning.
Good afternoon.
I'll keep it kind of short, but let me throw a word of praise in. As I've always said about you, you bring back Dick Reifenberg in the personification, man. Outstanding work. You do it all the time, and it's well done. Well done.
Charlie, thank you very much.
Keep it up. The issue of the Buffalo sports writers trying to create a drive a wedge between the management and the ownership. I think the biggest problem there are for Buffalo fans, and I'm old school. The Bills quarterback club is they're a little long in the tooth, and they've been year in year out. The people who have, in fact, wanted a different kind of quarterback, and they have no concept. Their ideas of winning are verboten. It's yesterday. Secondly, the Buffalo News sports writers, we only got one newspaper, so those guys are not in competition. And if you ever listen to any of their press conferences, these guys only ask questions that are current and are relevant, and they don't enhance the process. And I think the third thing about players and the game itself, some of my former college guys we played in college together are now pros, or ex-pros, I should say. You know, Buffalo doesn't have the greatest reputation in the NFL. It's a place to want to come to play. So the Bengals, I've seen, it's trying to take on a comprehensive work in progress, and they keep getting snarky down on each turn. So, but if they continue along the process, I see a new stadium in place. I see the opportunity to grab a bigger market, incorporating the Toronto market. And I also see a great opportunity for the team to be returned to competitiveness.
Yeah, okay, Charlie, thanks. There's a lot there to deal with. And let's be clear, I never said that the sports writers, local or otherwise, try to drive a wedge between the coach and general manager. My biggest complaint is when they just kind of repeat what's reported without, you know, their own independent research, I guess, you know, and we're talking about the coach-GM relationship here. You know, it's sort of recycled, recirculated. Find out for yourself whether there's a rift between the two. You know, don't just keep repeating it until it's repeated so often that it becomes, you know, in many people's minds, fact. But a lot of other stuff in that call, Charlie, including stadium issues. And,
yeah.
I the only thing I might disagree with, and Donald probably disagrees with me on this, I think the perception that Buffalo is a bad place for free agent, players don't want to play here, I think is overblown. Do some players feel that way? Sure they do. But I don't think that's much of a hindrance when it comes to signing players.
I think when you talk about it being a bad place, I wouldn't say it's a bad place to come. I would say when you have so many national writers, saying the things that they say about this organization from the outside, not knowing really what's going on the inside. You have players from around the country that say, man, do I really want to go there? Is it unstable? You know, what's going on out there in Buffalo? Is that something I want to do? They haven't won in 17 years, but is it on the rise now? Is that organization on the rise, or is it so unstable? I don't know if I want to go there. Like, players have thoughts in their mind in places that I wouldn't want to go to Cleveland. You know, I wouldn't want to go to a certain place because it might just end my career. And so, not saying that Buffalo is that place, but when you have so many reporters saying negative things, it can get into a player's mind about, you know, if they want to go there or not.
All right. Well, we're just getting the conversation going here. We're going to talk more about these issues. And, of course, you're welcome to join us, including the discussion on who might be the number two roster that Sean McDermott says is the number two receiver that Sean McDermott says is on the roster. And we're going to hear a little bit from the commissioner and from Dean Blandino, the vice president of officiating, on some of the changes, some of the tweaks they've made. So we've got a lot more ground to cover. You're always welcome to join us at 803-0550 and toll free 1-888-552-550. John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. We're live at One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back, John Murphy, Donald Jones. We are live at One Bills Drive. Welcome to those of you listening on our flagship radio station, WGR Sports Radio 550. Those of you tuned in to the simulcast on MSG, we're coming to you from our One Buffalo studio on a beautiful sunny day. A little chilly, but a beautiful sunny day in Orchard Park. I like the way this weather's trending, Donald.
I like the way it's trending as well. You know, is it supposed to be like 50 today or something?
Yes.
Like that? Yeah,
we can handle that. I can handle that. You probably can't, but you'll probably whine about it. But I think 50's okay.
It'll wear on me. Now, how long will it be 50s until you get to where it's like, okay, 65, 70. And
what do I look like, Don Paul here? I don't know.
Hey, you've been living here for a long time now.
Yeah, and I know not to try to predict weather. It's unpredictable. It's crazy. We could have snow next week.
I'll take that.
Let's take a call here. Sean from Vegas. Sean, are you a Bills fan in Las Vegas?
Absolutely.
What happens when the Raiders come to guys like you and people who follow other teams? What do you think happens?
Oh, I'll love the Bills to the day I die.
Now, will you still go to the games just because they're building this whole immaculate stadium and everything going on?
Oh, it looks amazing. I'm so excited for the Raiders to come to Vegas. And you know, I'll probably root a little bit for the Raiders on the side when they come here, but I'll be a Bills fan forever.
Probably a lot of people like you, I would think, Sean. I mean, first of all, Vegas, I've never been, but it seems to me it's kind of a transient community where people come from other places and they probably bring their NFL allegiances with them. And there's probably a lot of people in your boat, right, that come from somewhere, root for their team, and happy to have the Raiders come so they can enjoy NFL football, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, actually, I'm born and raised here.
Oh, wow. Okay.
A lot of people are more nowadays that are born and raised here. A lot of people my age in their 30s. And, yeah, I mean, you know, we got teams from all over the place, but there's a ton of Raider fans here. I mean, a ton of Raider fans already in Las Vegas.
Hmm. And how did you become a Bills fan? I know you have other things you want to talk about, but how did you get to be a Bills fan?
I don't know. You know, I'm growing up playing football. Bruce Smith was my favorite player, and you know, I always wore the number 78, and I always played defensive end. And you know, I grew up in the early 90s, so the Bills were one of the teams then, and I've loved them ever since.
Okay, great. You have an agenda as well. Tell us about that. What did you want to talk about?
Yeah, well, I mean, I actually had another thing, too, I wanted to talk about with the Vegas thing is the population. A lot of people think that, you know, Vegas, you know, because if you Wikipedia, it says it's 700,000 is the population. But more importantly, Clark County, which is where Las Vegas is, has a population of about 1.5 million people. So I think it's a little misleading. And also, you know, there's 41 million people that come and visit here every year. So I don't think the filling the stadium up is going to be any kind of an issue here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
I think about, obviously, you have the people that live there, but you have the thought process of my team, the Bills, playing the Raiders in Vegas. I can go to Vegas and have a short vacation out of it. I can go to Vegas, gamble, do whatever it is that you want to do in the casinos and in the clubs, but then on Sunday I can go see a game. So I don't think it's going to be an issue to fill up that stadium.
Yeah, not at all. But onto the number two wide receiver thing, I think they're going to target O.J. Howard in the draft. I think they're going to go with a lot of two tight end sets this year. You know, and we all know, I mean, at least I think Clay's probably going to get cut in the next few years. His cap number is going to be pretty ridiculous. And then we have O.J. Howard as the tight end of the future. And I think tight end's a really overlooked thing in the NFL nowadays, especially when you have a quarterback like most teams do, like Tyrod Taylor, who kind of needs that security blanket, you know, when things get tight in the pocket. So I'll hang up now, guys, and I'll listen. Thanks for
Sean. Thanks for calling. Yeah, Donald, you're an O.J. Howard proponent, right? Kind of?
I mean,
am I putting words in your mouth? Don't let me do that.
You were kind of doing that. No, I mean, I look at it. I do think that they're going to use a lot of two tight end sets in this offense, in this zone scheme. I think they would like to have two tight ends that can get down the field. I don't know if – a lot of people say that, you know, taking tight end at the number 10 pick is you just don't do that. But you never know what these teams and what these coaches, what these GMs are thinking. You know, it's like, man, we like this guy. Do we want to pass up? Maybe we just take him right here. You know, and next thing you see the Bills take O.J. Howard at number 10. But this is a deep tight end class, you know, so they might feel like, you know what, maybe there's another tight end that they like over O.J. Howard that they can get in the third round or something like that. It is a deep draft.
Hey, let me get back to Michael Floyd for a second. An earlier caller, last segment, talked about a Facebook report, right?
Yeah.
Bills Mafia Facebook report about Michael Floyd being linked to the Bills. So thanks to somebody on Twitter, they show us that it was first and only reported on a website called The Fifth Tackle, Sports News and Rumors. And they describe themselves as a dedicated couple of lads who seek to bring you all the news and rumors in the world of rugby league. So as far as Michael Floyd, should I go on with this? This is like textbook fake news, by the way. Look, maybe the Bills will sign Michael Floyd, but it hasn't been reported anywhere credibly. But their headline is Buffalo Bills are interested in signing Michael Floyd. They talk about his arrest record. Now, they report this, and it's written kind of like they write in the U.K., the Bills are believed to have already tabled an offer to the former Notre Dame wide receiver a two-year deal. Where did that come from? Don't you think that would have been reported somewhere by a better, more credible football reporter this side of the ocean?
Yes. I mean,
wouldn't you think?
But come on.
Whatever. You know, stranger things have happened. Do the Bills have a need at receiver? Sure they do. I haven't heard that there's interest in Michael Floyd, but the fifth quarter, a couple of lads who report rugby league news have decided to dip their toe into the NFL, and it's been spread on Facebook, and that's how things happen. I guess.
Fake news.
That's how fake news happens.
I mean, like you said, if this was a real thing and if there was an offer made, if anything, his agent would have put it out there.
Or Schefter or somebody.
Yes, exactly. Just to get the pot stirring. Maybe another team will come out and say, man, if they're offering them, maybe we need to offer them. Especially one of the teams in the division. Like, that's what agents do, you know. Now, his agent didn't do that. Nobody else reported that, so I don't know.
I'm sure the lads at the fifth quarter who report on the rugby league are fine lads.
The rugby league. I wonder if what they report on the rugby league is real news.
Maybe more real. I don't know. Craig in Rochester. Craig, welcome to the show. You're on the air with us.
Hey, guys. Just real quick, the caller who talked about Vegas. I absolutely love Vegas and even a Sabre fan to try to go catch him someday. That I just think it would be a lot of fun. I feel very bad for Oakland, but, you know, in terms of my own selfish Bills fan, that'd be great to go to. But I just wanted to report, you know, I like, you know, Murph, what you're saying in regards to reporters. You know, sometimes just they you know, reach and churn over things rather than researching. I can't say how many times this season that Robert Woods or Charles Clay wasn't playing, even though, you know, Sal Capaccio would say, yes, he's playing this weekend. They'd play catch balls, and, you know, it just got kind of annoying because it felt like, in a certain sense, not that the Bills are targeted, but it still kept, you know, putting their name in a negative light with stuff. And I didn't think they have enough issues, but that was certainly not one that was fair to them when those guys did play. And I think I wish more reporters would do research. And I guess the other thing is just, I think reputation-wise, you guys touched on that. I think now the Pegulas, because I think that's helped it. At least show that Buffalo is willing to pay for free agents, so I think that helps a little bit.
Yeah, I think so too, and they provide the cash to do it too. You know, there was a time, even in the salary cap era, Donald, Craig, thanks for calling, when, you know, it's not just cap, you got to have cash.
Yeah.
And it's pretty apparent that when the Bills want a player, need a player, feel like he's important to the team, this ownership group will come up with the cash and let the contract people structure the contract so it fits under the cap.
Right.
They've done it several times in the two or three years of ownership.
That's what they're trying to do. When we talk about, you know, Terry Pegula saying, you know, I haven't had the team for this entire 17-year run. He's only had the team for two. It doesn't mean that he doesn't feel it. He's trying to do everything he can do to put a winning product out there on the field every single year, like a team in the playoffs every single year. And if he has to come up with the cash to do it, then he's willing to do that. And like you said, he'll tell, you know, Jim Overdorf and everybody upstairs, let's make sure that we can structure this under the cap, but we can give this person the cash that they want or that they need or what they're valued at, so that we can get this person on our team to help our team win. I think that's a great thing. You have that. And I hope that this coach attracts more free agents to come here as well. When you hear all of the guys that they signed this year, everything was about, you know, how he talked to them about their families. And it was more about family than just, I want you to come play for me.
Right.
You know, I think doing things like that is what attracts free agents when maybe, you know, they might have came here on a visit but had a mindset like, man, I would like to sign somewhere else. When they get here, it's like, you know what, I couldn't walk out the door.
To be fair, I think Rex attracted his share of free agents, maybe a different type of player, different type of guy. But, you know, he brought along a lot of his former Jets people. And more than that, I think he had his own style, which attracted some players. Like, hey, this guy's a player's coach. It's going to be a lot of fun to play here.
Yeah, definitely. You know? Every coach has their own style of selling players to get here, of getting players to buy into their system.
Yeah.
Rex Ryan, I know from talking to players that were with the Jets when he was down there with the Jets, that they love playing for Rex Ryan. They really did. Bart Scott and all of those guys. Like, man, I love playing for him. Like, you run through a brick wall for this guy. But it just didn't work out in terms of wins, except for, what, the 2 years they went to the AFC Championship. But other than that, I mean, it didn't work out in terms of wins. And then you had so many problematic players coming into his locker rooms and different things that happened, which, you know, got him out of New York and really got him out of here.
All right, a break, then more. The John Murphy Show. We're coming to you live from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show, the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. John Murphy and Donald Jones still to come on the show. We're going to hear from Coach Sean McDermott some of his other comments from yesterday's meetings in Arizona. He had we talked about a lot of it yesterday. More to come on that. More from Terry Pegula. The big news from the owners' meetings, of course, was the move of the Raiders, and our next caller has some thoughts on that. Antonio from Lackawanna. Is that it, Antonio? Am I pronouncing that correctly?
Yes, sir.
Thank you for coming on. We're doing great.
I had a more of a would like you guys' opinion about the move from Oakland to Las Vegas. I was thinking, like, you know, not so much of the veteran players, but more of the players that are getting drafted. Do you think that it would be a problem with, like, substance abuse more, being that they're in Vegas, Sin City, and the whole nine?
I don't know. I've never been to Vegas. You know, I've heard stories. I don't know if that's a problem.
We've all heard stories. Even though what happens in Vegas is supposed to stay in Vegas.
Not when the NFL stories, gets there. It won't stay there anymore.
Right, exactly. Listen, there are teams already in states where these different substances are legal. And, I mean, you haven't heard much of substance abuse from the Seahawks or from Denver or places like that. So I don't know if that's going to be an issue, man. These players understand – you know, for the most part, these players understand the situation that they're in and that the NFL is not, you know, guaranteed that you're going to be in this league. So you go ahead and mess up if you want to, and that team will get rid of you just as fast as they picked you up. You know, I mean, that's just how it works. Players understand that. I don't think that's going to be an issue. Will you have some guys that might get in some trouble? Yeah, but you have to have the right leadership on that team. The team is rolling right now. I think those guys get it.
There's enough trouble in every NFL city.
It is. I mean, it's trouble in every
so-called Sin City to find trouble. You can go right here in Buffalo.
In Buffalo. Yeah. Any place that you go to, there's going to be something that you can get into, especially being
– yeah,
if you're looking for it. And especially being an NFL player, when people find that out, I mean, anyone can attract you to different things. It's on you to decide, I don't want to be involved in that. I want to work every day, and that's all I really care about. So – they have to have the right leadership. They have to have the right structure within the organization, but I think they'll be fine.
All right, coming up after the break, we're going to talk a little bit about Sammy Watkins. Sean McDermott talked about Sammy Watkins at the meetings out west, and Jamie Eisenberg, the senior fantasy writer for CBS Sports, has some thoughts on that, his conversation with Sean McDermott about Watkins and the fantasy football implications on that. Jamie Eisenberg, when we return. Donald and I are back as well. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Radio Network Sports Update.
Update from One Bills Drive. The NFL meetings wrapping up now in Phoenix, Arizona. Bills owner Terry Pegula discussed the state of the team during a session last night with the media in Phoenix. He dispelled recent reports that head coach Sean McDermott and GM Doug Whaley were not getting along. Instead, he raved about how impressed he's been with the way those two have worked. He said those guys get along great. That's what the Bills owner said anyway. And he also said the hardest part of his a brief tenure so far as owner of the Bills is that the fans do not have a winner to root for yet. Terry Pegula, his entire comments up on our website right now, buffalobills.com. Before they broke at the end of the meetings, NFL owners approved some tweaks in some of the rules, all designed to enhance the flow of play. Owners passed several rules changes, adopting resolutions that they think will speed up the game and improve player safety. They put off until May, allowing a bit more creativity in players' celebrations. While the Raiders are bound for Las Vegas, they will spend the next 2 years in Oakland, and the executive director of the Oakland Alameda County Coliseum Authority says it's unlikely they'd be welcomed back for a third year. Owner Mark Davis says he was open to extending the team lease and playing in 2019 in Oakland as well, but the Oakland Alameda County Coliseum Authority says they are not welcome there in 2019. Roger Goodell will return to New England, speaking at the end of the meetings yesterday. He confirmed plans that he will attend the Patriots kickoff game at Gillette Stadium in Foxborough. Jerry Jones, speaking to the meeting, indicated his only timetable for a resolution on Tony Romo's future is before training camp. He says there is no imminent deadline that will push a decision on what to do with Romo. Sabres finished off their back-to-back set with a loss in Columbus last night, 3-1 the final. With the loss, the Sabres now officially eliminated from playoff contention. Evan Rodriguez scored the lone goal for Buffalo. Anders Nilsson with 26 saves. Sam Reinhart did not play because of a violation of team policy. And that is the update from One Bills Drive. It is the John Murphy Show. We are presented by Napa Auto Parts, John Murphy and Donald Jones. We talked a lot about the move to Oakland by the Raiders and how the door was open for that. Some people think that the proliferation of fantasy football might have something to do with that. Joining us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline right now is the senior fantasy writer for CBS Sports. He's been doing it for 10 years or more. Happy to have Jamie Eisenberg on the line with us. Jamie, John Murphy, Donald Jones, thank you very much for joining us today. We appreciate it.
Oh, thanks for having me, fellas. How you doing?
Good. Do you think, we just had a caller talk about the Las Vegas, Sin City reputation. Do you think the popularity of fantasy football over the last decade or more has in some way made things clear, made things open for the NFL to move into Las Vegas, which once was the gambling capital of North America?
I'm sure that probably has a small factor to it, but I think, the billions and billions of dollars probably has a lot more to do with it. So certainly, the NFL being open to fantasy football, that's always something whenever I come, I'm actually at the annual meetings. And so whenever I come to these things, I get, more people saying to me, wow, fantasy is such a big part of the NFL that, you're here covering stuff like this. So it certainly has grown in its popularity and the NFL is accepting of that. And certainly, as things get more and more, where it's hard for them to avoid, what happens behind the scenes or, what goes unsaid, certainly things like gambling and whatnot. Not that that's at the forefront of what the NFL is thinking, but certainly it's something that's going to be unavoidable moving forward now that they're in Vegas.
Now, I know it's not something that's at the forefront. I know you say it's unavoidable, but is it going to be a problem for the NFL and its players?
Well, it's interesting that you bring that up because, Brandon Marshall was here. He was the only player asked to represent the players and talk to the owners and team officials and Roger Goodell. And he expressed some pessimism, just the fact that you're going to come downstairs from a hotel or get some time off. And certainly, you know how it is when you get that time off as an NFL player. You want to enjoy yourself. And where is the better place to enjoy yourself than on a strip in Las Vegas? And so, who knows where they're going to be staying when they go there, how much time they're going to be given. You know, I've heard some people talking about that. You know, will they go in 2 days before? Will they go in 1 day before? Will they try to limit the exposure to, you know, what the players can do in Las Vegas and whatnot? But temptation is going to be there, and there's probably going to be some issues that do arise as a result of that. You know, hopefully it's not from the hometown team once the Raiders do get there, but, you know, with the teams coming into town, I'm sure it's going to be something that they have to take a look at and look at very closely.
Jamie, with your focus on fantasy football, I wonder, what's your goal, what's your mission when you go to the owners' meetings here in March, and how do you try to serve your fantasy football readers with the information you gather at these owners' meetings in March?
Oh, it's one of my favorite events. I think this is like the fifth or sixth year that I've been doing it. And for me, it's the coaches' breakfast. You know, they give you the availability over 2 days, you know, 1 day AFC, 1 day NFC, to talk to all the coaches. And usually you see all the beat writers, you know, they sit down with their respective teams and they get as much information as they can gather. I'm kind of like a butterfly. You know, I just jump from table to table. You know, I ask one or two questions and I move on. Just trying to, you know, get the hot topic players, you know, find out as much information as you can. You know, it certainly helps me do my job better. And like you said, you know, I get to bring to my audience, our audience at CBS Sports, you know, as much of the little inside details, you know, some quotes here or there. Obviously, you know how coaches talk. You know, they're very glowing about their players. But it's, you know, certain things that you try to read between the lines. Like, just to give you an example, I asked Andy Reid about Spencer Ware. And he said, you know, he talked about how he loves Spencer Ware and all the, you know, great things he did. And he said, you know, Spencer's got a role for us. And, you know, if a guy's a starter, you don't really hear somebody say he's got a role for us. You expect that maybe they're going to bring somebody else in, mm-hmm. Possibly in the NFL draft to compete with him.
Hey, Jamie, I know, you know, at the owners meeting this year, the big talk was about the Raiders move. And then you have the coaches that you get to interview, and they give you nuggets about certain players and things like that. But one of the things that we talked about, obviously, were rules changes. And every year you get rules changes at the owners meeting. So I don't know if any of the rules changes this year affect fantasy, but if not this year, what's a rule change in the past, let's just say 3 years, that really could change the outcome of how you look at fantasy?
I think probably the biggest one would be the catch rule. You know, I mean, when you lose those receptions, the yards that come with it, you know, the touchdowns we've seen, you know, the Dez Bryant catch, the Calvin Johnson plays, you know, so that's kind of, you know, impacted fantasy to a certain extent. You know, for the most part this year, the rules haven't been, I think, you know, I haven't really looked at all of them, to be honest with you, but I don't think there's one that really impacts fantasy per se. You know, the leaping over the line at the for the kicks, you know, that's not going to be a problem. You know, where you place the ball, you know, that's been something that's talked about the last few years. You know, that's somewhat of an impact because, you know, maybe you're losing a yard or two here or there, but, you know, overtime rules, things like that, that doesn't really necessarily, you know, sway the fantasy player one way or the other.
We're on the line with Jamie Eisenberg. He is the senior fantasy football writer for CBSSports.com. Hey, Jamie, as you said, you got a chance to talk to a lot of these coaches, including the Bills' own Sean McDermott. And you spent some time talking to him about Sammy Watkins' recovery from, you know, the foot surgery that he had in this offseason. Watkins would be a guy that I think a lot of fantasy football players would be interested in, right? Tell us what you found out about that.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because there's two examples of guys who have had, you know, sort of a similar track. I don't know if the surgery has been the same or the exact injury has been the same, but, you know, between Dez Bryant and Julian Edelman, they had two separate procedures on their feet, foot per se, you know, and you've seen how they've come back. You know, Dez, I guess, is still in the process of doing that, you know, but we saw in the playoffs that he looked like a monster again, and, you know, he told me at the Pro Bowl that he feels like he's back to being 100%. And Julian Edelman, the same thing. You know, you saw the way he sort of carried that receiving core last year once Rob Gronkowski got hurt. So hopefully the same thing happened for Watkins. And I think, you know, from the fantasy perspective, these are the type of players you look for that can be difference makers for you because people will overlook them after they've been burned a couple of times. And that's really been the case with Watkins, you know, going back to last year, you know, investing, you know, somewhat of a high draft pick in him and then the foot problem creeping up. So I think if he falls in your draft, you know, he's going to be in that round four, round five range. If he plays 13-plus games, as we saw 2 years ago, he could be an absolute monster.
Now, Jamie, if Sammy goes through mini camps with no issues and goes through training camp with no issues, does he climb up maybe to the third or even a second round?
Yeah, I don't know if he'll get to the second round just because of the receivers that will have to leapfrog to get there, but the third round could definitely be a possibility, certainly in leagues where you get a point per catch. But definitely, if he starts to look good, has one of those, you know, big performances in a preseason game, you know, and shows that foot is back, everything is sort of shaping up for him in a big way because health is the biggest thing. Getting Tyrod Taylor back, that's huge. The addition of Rick Dennison, the offensive coordinator, you know, I talked to Demaryius Thomas at the Pro Bowl about Rick, and he said, you know, the running game is going to set up the passing game, but that's going to lead to some big plays. And as you saw in Denver, you know, with a good quarterback in Peyton Manning and some, you know, issues last year. You know, the two guys there in Thomas and Sanders still put up some big numbers. So I think Watkins is somebody that you definitely want to look at. And, you know, hopefully he leads to some big games for the Bills and for fantasy owners.
It seems like, Jamie, your posts are designed to kind of keep guys on fantasy players' radar, right, including Watkins. You see these comments, pretty good comments from Sean McDermott about his recovery and just a guy to keep an eye on as we move forward towards fantasy season, I would guess, right?
Yeah, I think so. You know, like I said, you know, that's kind of where I try to, I guess, make a little niche for myself is getting to things like this and yeah. Pro Bowls and Combine and, you know, trying to bring the coach's perspective. And for me, it was fun. I made Coach McDermott laugh. You know, I asked him, I said, do you have a magic formula for keeping Watkins healthy? You know, he sort of chuckled with that a little bit. But, yeah, you know, that's kind of the fun aspect for me.
You also got into some quarterbacks, including Andrew Luck and his rehab, his recovery. What did you find out about him, and what are his fantasy prospects?
I think, you know, similar to Watkins, he's going to be a guy that may slip a little bit. Not too much, you know, especially if the reports when we get closer to the season are positive. But, you know, the fact that you hear that they may hold him out until the start of training camp and, you know, coming off shoulder surgery, that's never a positive thing when you talk about a quarterback. But you know what Aaron Rodgers did last year. You see what Tom Brady did when he came back from the suspension and the new weapon that he gets in Brandon Cooks. And so that's going to push Luck down a little bit. And then he gets sort of in that mix of guys with Drew Brees and Matt Ryan coming off an MVP season. So I think for me, Luck is still the third best quarterback, but you're going to see him maybe slip into the, you know, 3-6 range. And if he falls, the further he falls, you've seen what he's capable of doing. And I think that's really a good thing, again, when you talk about value.
Jamie, you sorry about that. You had a post about Tyrod Taylor. Obviously, he came back to the Bills. If you can get Sammy Watkins back healthy, if they add another weapon through the draft or get a guy like Charles Clay involved in his offense, where will Tyrod Taylor go in the draft, and how do you think he'll do this year?
You know, it's interesting at that position because there are so many great players and the numbers that these guys have been putting up, you know, it kind of pushes Taylor's fantasy value down a little bit. But when you're talking about leagues that you get 6 points for passing touchdowns, you know, his value's a little bit lower. But it's the 4 points for passing touchdowns. I know that sounds strange. Why would he be better in leagues where you don't get the same amount of points? But it's that rushing total that makes him that much more exciting. When he leads the league in rushing yards as a position last year, he leads them or ties Dak Prescott for rushing touchdowns. And so, you know, I think if they can add another weapon, that would certainly be great. I think the offense is going to be good for him. And if you don't like drafting a quarterback early, if you don't like Rodgers, you don't like Brady, you want to wait on somebody, he's one of those perfect guys to wait for because week to week he's not going to hurt you. And some weeks he can win the week for you. But if you put a great team around him and you get him late, he could be great for your fantasy team.
Jamie Eisenberg is our guest, CBS Sports senior fantasy football writer. You just posted, I think, a couple of days ago, I guess your first version of potential fantasy football busts for the upcoming season. 6 months before the season begins, you're identified busts, including Cam Newton. How do you figure he could be a bust this year, Jamie?
Well, you know, it's not a stretch, you know, coming off of the year that he had a last season, you know, where he went from 35 touchdowns in his MVP campaign to 19 last year. Ron Rivera has said he wants him to run less. And now you factor in the shoulder surgery. So I think, again, it goes both ways. You know, if you want to, you know, take the Andrew Luck approach and just wait on Cam Newton, hopefully he falls and he gets back to the MVP level, then you're in great shape. But I think we're seeing a guy that's becoming a little bit more reliant on his passing, a little less reliant on his rushing. That's kind of been the best thing about his fantasy game. Not that he's a bad passer, but he's not exactly the most accurate guy. And so you take away Tech in, you don't know what they're going to add yet. So I think it's just where he could potentially go in draft compared to what his value is. He sort of falls in the bust range for me, unfortunately.
And you got 32-year-old running back Adrian Peterson, who doesn't have a team yet, also is one of your busts at the running back spot. Talk about that.
He just garners so much attention, you know, and I think we're all guilty of it. You think of nostalgia, you know, when you talk about, you know, think about how 2016 went with all the unfortunate deaths that we suffered, and everybody gets all caught up in the names, and you hear about, you know, potential guys coming back or leaving, you know, their respective sports. Nostalgia is a big part of how we sort of, you know, view this game in fantasy football as well. And I think when you hear Adrian Peterson's name, you know, it's funny. Giants talked about him this week. Mike McCarthy talked about him today. You know, people are still caught up in that name. And I just hope, you know, the smart fantasy player doesn't fall for that, for a guy that's 32 that could, you know, only play 3 games last year. And it's just a tough position. The body breaks down, and I just don't think he's going to be the same guy anymore.
Jamie, I want to come into this division, the AFC East, and the team that's been on top of the division and top of the NFL, really, for the last decade and a half, the New England Patriots. They brought in another weapon for Tom Brady, Brandon Cooks. What should we expect from Brandon Cooks this year?
Very happy Tom Brady. You know, so it's just one of those situations where there's so many mouths to feed in that offense. You know, if Gronk is back at the level that he's used to being at, and, you know, Julian Edelman, who averages over 9 targets a game, and the development of Malcolm Mitchell, you know, what Chris Hogan still brings to the table, the two running backs out of the backfield are maybe 3 now when you factor in Rex Burkhead. They add Dwayne Allen as a tight end also. So there's just a lot of guys that Tom Brady has to make happy. So while Brandon Cooks may ascend to number one on the depth chart, it lowers his fantasy value just a little bit. And I think, you know, people need to realize that even though he's going to as good, or you could argue maybe better, from New Orleans to Drew Brees to Tom Brady, it doesn't necessarily help his fantasy value because he has to share the field with all those great players. And you know that Brady is going to get all those guys involved.
Yeah, Brandon, you actually identified Brandon Cooks as a potential bust for the upcoming season, and you uncovered a nugget, which I found pretty interesting. What is it? There has not been a receiver who's been the Patriots' number one receiving target in, what, 4 seasons? Is that right?
Mm-hmm. There hasn't been a number one fantasy receiver for the, Patriots.
Yeah.
You know, so as good as that offense has been, you know, it's kind of a skewed nugget because Gronk is the best tight end in football and the best tight end in fantasy. But in terms of their receiving core, you know, Edelman's had a hard time staying healthy, and they just haven't found that number one outside guy really since Randy Moss left. So Cooks would be that guy. You know, he certainly could have a big campaign, but, you know, when you just take a step back and see all these guys that have to get the ball, it kind of leads to, you know, I think him being overdrafted a little bit.
Interesting stuff, Jamie. Thank you very much for coming on the air with us. We appreciate it, and we'll keep following your stuff on CBSSports.com. Thanks.
Well, my pleasure. Take care, guys.
Jamie Eisenberg is the senior fantasy writer for CBS Sports. He's got a couple of good posts up there. One of them based on his conversation with Sean McDermott at the NFL meetings. He says, rehab on schedule, Watkins' progress excites the Bills and entices fantasy owners. And he's got his early version, his version 1.0 of fantasy football busts. Season doesn't start for 6 months. I'm stunned that he's already looking at busts.
And it might be a little bit different, you know, once we get in here to mini camps and then on to training camp, he might have, you know, 2.0, then 3.0.
Yeah.
And
he'll update it. But
yeah,
still, it's
definitely
going
to update it. Just like these mock drafts that come out when the season is still happening. People are putting mock drafts out, and it's like, what? We're still in season right now. What is going on? But Sammy Watkins, you look at the guys that have had foot injuries in the past couple of years, like you talked about, Julian Edelman, Demaryius Thomas, you talk about – even Julio Jones out there. I mean, a lot of these guys have really rebounded from having these foot issues. Hopefully, you know, Sammy Watkins can rebound from having the second surgery that he had this offseason. I hope that he can stay on the field and not have any issues. If so, I think that is going to be a great thing for Tyrod Taylor and this offense, especially if they add another weapon on the outside, which they're going to end up doing through the draft. I think this offense can be explosive, and I hope it can be a lot better in the passing game.
We thank Jamie Eisenberg for joining us to talk about fantasy football. He joined us by the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Subway, eat fresh. John Murphy, Donald Jones coming to you live from One Bills Drive. As the NFL owners' meetings wrap up out west in Arizona, there were some rules changes. We'd like to hear from you about one of the things mentioned by Sean McDermott yesterday, and that is the number two wide receiver, Coach McDermott, who we will hear more of his comments a little bit later on today. But Coach McDermott said yesterday that the number two receiver behind Sammy Watkins is on the Bills roster right now. What do you think about that? Who would it be? Who could he be referring to? That's our Twitter poll. We got close to 1,000 votes on Twitter already. Sean McDermott says the Bills' number two wide receiver is on the roster. Who will it be? As of now, 42% of you identify Andre Holmes as the number two receiver. Some pointing out that they're paying him as the number two. Mm-hmm. Interesting. I guess projection that would be. 28% of you say Charles Clay would be the number two wide receiver. 14% or 16% have somebody else in mind. 14% have Colby Listenbee in mind. Let's hear from you either via Twitter or via the phone lines. 803-0550, the number. Outside Buffalo, toll-free 1-888-552-550. Or you can do it via Twitter. Let us know what you think. The number two wide receiver on the Buffalo Bills roster. All right, rules changes.
Before you get into the rules changes, wouldn't say he's being paid as a number two receiver. I mean, not in terms of, like, you look across the league
Robert Woods is making.
Right. You look across the league and what these guys are making. Number two receivers are making to $10 million a year. Kenny Stills is getting paid down there. He's not their number one receiver. So Andre Holmes is not being paid anywhere near a number two receiver. So, you know, don't look at those numbers at all.
All right, rules changes went through yesterday and approved. There weren't a whole lot approved. One of them, I think maybe the most significant, the one that will be most visible to fans anyway, is the one that the replay review, they were going to replace the monitor under the hood with a handheld device, a tablet, and authorize designated members of the officiating department in New York to make the final decision on replay reviews. It's going to happen in New York. It will not happen on the field. No longer will officials go under the hood to look at replays. It'll be sent back to New York. The official will look at the tablet, put on a headset, and have dialogue with the officiating department in New York, Dean Blandino, et cetera, on what the call is and what they believe the call is. And the official on the field will basically do whatever he's told to do in New York. It's a change.
Yeah.
And Dean Blandino, the director of officiating, vice president of officiating, kind of outlined yesterday at the end of the meetings how it will work and what the purpose of this rules change is.
We've been doing this for 3 years now, since 2014. We've been involved in the replay decision-making process. And there are three people in the room, myself, our senior director of officiating, and one of our officiating supervisors that can make decisions. And so we have one person that's assigned to each game, and they're responsible for calling things to our attention. And we had a real good year last year with the three people in the room feeling out that early window on Sunday. And so if there are up to three challenges going on at once, we can manage that. And it would be a very rare instance where they would all be initiated at the same moment and have a fourth where you really couldn't get to it. By the way it flows, you can get to the replay station. And we feel comfortable with that early window of games.
Dean Blandino talking about how they will juggle more than one game going on at once. That's one of the issues. And I think I mentioned this to you, Donald. I had the occasion, might have been 7 or 8 years ago, of watching the NHL, the National Hockey League process work. I actually did a story when I worked at Channel 4 from what they called then the War Room in Toronto. They set it up. I'm sure that the NFL is kind of following that protocol in some respects. They have one officiating assistant assigned to each NHL game. He watches the game on HD. He has the capacity to be in contact with the on-game officials. And they call over the supervisor, the Dean Blandino counterpart in the NHL, to look at, back then it was disputed goals. And I would think that's the model that the National Football League is going to follow. Look, there are weekends, Sundays, when there's, what, 7 or 8 1 o'clock games going on. Sometimes they overlap. Sounds like Blandino doesn't think it'll be a problem. But I would keep an eye on that because, you know, you might have – I mean, the worst possible scenario is say, hey, Buffalo, you wait. We're figuring out this call in Kansas City first. And then you sit there in Buffalo and wait.
Yeah,
that would not be good.
That would not be good at all. I don't know if we would know we wouldn't know that that's what's going on, but you'd be sitting there waiting. And it's like, what is going, why is it taking so long to get this whole thing? It's supposed to be a quicker process. But the fact that they have three guys in that room, I think it would be rare that all three of those guys are being used at the same time and they can't get something done. I think at some point it's going to happen. At some point it's like, wow, it just came in. We didn't expect it to happen, but it's not going to be often that happens.
I agree with that. There also, though, is, I believe, it's a perception thing more than anything.
Mm-hmm.
So no longer is that official, the white hat down on the field, the ultimate arbiter of that game. Now there's a – I mean, we talk about Dean Blandino all the time. I don't know how many casual fans know who Dean Blandino is.
Right.
But he and his staff are going to be the guys, have the ultimate authority to make these calls. And, you know, again, at the risk of sounding old school – I don't know how good that is, you know, to have the eye in the sky, the eye in New York, settling these issues. And quite frankly, I think the issues come up a lot more in the National Football League than they do, say, in the National Hockey League, whose system works pretty well.
Yeah.
But it happens more often, and you have coaches' challenges in the NFL that are going to have to be decided, not by the official on the field, but by the group in an office in New York City. Now, it will standardize methods, yep. You know, you would think it would be more even application of the rules, which is sort of saying that will cover up for some of the deficiencies.
That's exactly what they're doing. That is exactly what they're doing to me.
Like, some of the weaker officials, the weaker links in the officiating crew will be off the hook now.
Exactly.
And they probably like it.
I'm sure they do like it. You know, I look at it like, man, this is why I feel like you should just move to having the full-time officials and let those guys make the calls. That's what they're trained to do. let those guys make the calls and train them to make the right calls. I feel like you can have a guy in the booth at the stadium who is a part of that crew that can call down and say, you just missed something, you need to change, reset the clock or something like that. But to have all of this stuff coming from New York, they're trying to take the pressure off of the officials, which is like, why are you taking the pressure off of these guys? You know, they should have the same pressure that everybody else has. They need to make the right calls.
The other thing that came up, and this is an issue near and dear to your heart, Donald, player celebrations discussed apparently, but no action taken on player celebrations. Mm-hmm. This became an issue a week ago when Troy Vincent of the league office put out that tweet that said, we're going to put together a video to show players the proper way to celebrate big plays. Commissioner Goodell said yesterday that he's going to meet with players and try to get, I guess, reach a consensus on what constitutes a proper celebration. They will talk about it again in May. Here's what the commissioner said yesterday about player celebration and where the league is headed on that front.
One of them I would touch on up front would be the player celebrations. The committee did quite a bit of work on that. They had some discussion this morning on that. I asked it to be tabled. I'd like to meet with a group of players to try to get some more input from them. We also want to do a little more work on just bringing clarity to the rule while allowing our players more ability to express themselves, to celebrate. We want to see that. We obviously want to put in reasonable safeguards against taunting and acts that we would think reflect poorly on, obviously, all of us. So we believe we can do that. We believe there's a great deal of focus on that. And I'm confident in May we'll get to that point.
More meetings to come in May, the commissioner said. He's confident they will get to that point. Mm-hmm. So what do you think? He'll put together a committee of the best dancers, the best celebrators in the NFL to, to give input into this?
Probably.
Yeah, why not?
Ultimately, the issue is that, and people might take this the wrong way, but culturally they celebrate different, you know. And so you have some players that will celebrate different and don't see it as anything wrong than other players. And so I think he wants to talk to everybody about, you know, is this okay, is this not okay, or this looks bad at the end, like at the league. And he wants the players to understand that this is not a good look for the league, and I think that's why he wants to talk to these guys and get it all clear.
He said, the commissioner just said, the league wants to give players more ability to express themselves. You have expressed doubt about that. You think they're trying to shut it. You have said, at least last week, they're trying to shut down the celebrations altogether. Do you still believe that?
I don't know if he wants to shut it down altogether, but there are certain celebrations that he just doesn't want because he feels like.
Can you blame him? I think, you know, I don't blame him for that. Dance party. It's not disco fever. It's not supposed to be R-rated either, as a matter of fact. I don't have a problem with that, trying to curb some of the enthusiasm that's expressed out there, some of the celebrations. You do blame him.
I guess.
Well, you don't. No, you do either, don't you?
I mean, I feel like there are certain celebrations that there's nothing wrong with. And, you know, they're not going to be allowed, but there's nothing wrong with it.
Anything come to mind?
Some of the dances that you see is like, you know, that's just how certain players dance and celebrate. It's frowned upon by certain people because you might say, well, my kids are watching this.
Yeah.
But, okay, it's not like these guys are doing anything bad. They're not doing anything bad. They're just dancing, and that's how they dance.
Some of Antonio Brown's dances, hip thrusts, that sort of thing, don't.
Antonio Brown is one incident where he goes a little bit over the line. But yeah, there are other things that they've taken out of this that shouldn't be taken out of this.
I think if they get to the point in May, and apparently they'll talk about it in May, if they get to the point where we talked a minute ago about taking authority away from officials, where officials don't have to throw flags,
right,
I'd be good with that. If the officials can warn a player that dance was inappropriate, don't do it again, or warn a player, hey, you're going to be fined for that, so don't do that again, and not throw a flag and not get on the, you know, I just think it's not something that NFL on-field officials should have to judge. I mean, do they have to go to dance school now to judge whether a dance is appropriate or not?
You definitely don't have to go to dance school. But when you look at Antonio Brown's celebration, people laugh at it. And people love it. You know, there are certain people that are like, oh, that is terrible. He's a horrible, like, that is terrible. But for the most part, fans love it. They love to be entertained like that. And it is entertainment.
Some fans think it's over the top.
Some fans do think
it's
over the top.
Nobody's saying he's terrible. I'm not saying, you know, he's terrible, what a horrible guy. But some fans in good faith say, that's too much. Come on. Tone it down. There's nothing wrong, right? You don't agree?
I don't.
You don't think fans could sit there and watch Antonio Brown and say, come on, cool it, too much, tone it down?
I just think it's entertainment.
All right. We disagree on that. We're going to come back and talk some more about the Bills, and you're welcome to join us. 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-552-550. The John Murphy Show. We're live at One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. Donald Jones and I, we will never fully agree on celebrations. And look, I'm not easily offended. I'm not. Some celebrations, and I'm thinking of you, Antonio Brown, cross the line. Cam Newton, yeah, what he does, I don't have a problem with that. I don't have a problem with most celebrations, but when it becomes something, look, when it's something that a parent has to say to their kid, why is he doing this? And he's struggling to explain it, then I got a problem with that.
Well, I mean, just like we were just talking about, it's really no more offensive than you going straight to a beer commercial every single commercial break. I mean, if you turn to a kids' network like Nickelodeon or Disney or something, you're never going to see a beer commercial. So now your kids are watching a football game, and it goes to multiple beer commercials within one commercial break. You know, that's offensive as well to a parent. It's like, I don't want my kid to watch all these beer commercials. Now he thinks drinking beer is a part of this, which it is a part of this, but – that's what we're talking
about. There's a difference there, I think, between on-field and commercials. I think there's a difference. But, yeah, as I said, we will never agree on this. 803-0550, the number to call with your comments, questions, or toll-free at 1-888-550-2550. Russell calling from Buffalo. Hello, Russell. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, guys. How are you doing today?
Great.
Listen, the celebration thing, if a guy scores, let's say the top guy scores 10, 12 touchdowns a year, it's a monumental occasion for him, you know what I mean? Within the reason. But, I mean, taking the celebration, the excitement out of the game is really not a good thing, because that's what the fans go there for, to see their favorite players celebrate or score a touchdown. So, like I say, if they score 10 or 12 touchdowns during the course of a season, that's a lot. So, I mean, within reason, John, I follow yours, and Donald, as far as the bird commercial, I understand that, but as far as everything else is concerned, come on, it's a game. It's still a game.
Yeah, I think we're in all agreement on that. It's a game. I love the fact that if they get to it in May, where they would take the officials, the on-field officials, right out of it and just issue suspensions or fines, hard to believe it would get to suspension level. Yeah. But if it did for repeat offenders, at least to get it out of the hands of the officials, I think would be a step forward.
I mean, for me, I have to agree there. You get it out of the hands of – I'm okay with – if you decide you want to fine these guys for doing it, then they get fined. I mean, that's just what it is. The guys are still going to do it regardless. If you the issue becomes, if you flag a guy and it affects his team, then you might stop it more than just fining a guy like Antonio Brown, who makes $15 million a year. You fine him $25,000, he's like, well, I score 10 times a year. I'll take that $25,000 fine every time.
I have $100,000.
Yeah, if you
let's get serious.
Yeah,
here is Ivan in Buffalo. Hello, Ivan. Welcome to the show.
Hey, how you doing, guys? I just want to make two comments. The first comment I want to make is about the head coach saying that the number two receiver is on the roster. I disagree with that. If we're talking about Andre Holmes, we know he hadn't done anything in a couple years. I mean, he couldn't even beat out Michael Crabtree over there in Oakland. And so now to bring him here to Buffalo to think he's going to take the place of Robert Woods, I kind of disagree with that. And then if we're looking at Kobe Listenby, I mean, he's really one-dimensional at this point. He doesn't go across the middle. So I think Buffalo need to focus on maybe drafting Mike Williams in the draft if he's available. The second comment I want to make is that I agree with you, Mr. Jones, what you're talking about. Let's look at the cheerleaders in the NFL. They do all kind of gyrating and everything, wear the skimpy outfits, and they cheer every time, a score is made. And so, I mean, if the NFL is going to come down on dancing, why not come down on that? I mean, some of the dances, things they do, you could say that's inappropriate. Let's not take one incident where you got the guy from Pittsburgh Steelers. Some of that gyrating is sort of like, outlandish and sort of stigma and needs to be toned down a little bit. But that's really one incident. Let's not make this a whole punitive type of thing. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I'll sit and let you guys
Okay. Thanks, Ivan. And look, you said if the NFL is going to come down on Dancy, and I think what the commissioner said yesterday is that they're looking to get ways to not come down on Dancy. They want clearly defined guidelines. That's what they're going to work through of what's acceptable and what's not. But I think they're trying to get out of the business of cracking down on celebrations. Don't you?
I hope so.
Isn't that what it sounds like they're doing?
I hope so. I hope that's what they're trying to do. But if they keep on making this thing a big deal, then this is all we're going to talk about every time somebody celebrates, you know? Like, that's what the NFL does sometimes in different leagues in general, but they'll make something so small into such a big deal, and it's like, how does this even have anything to do with the game? Why is it such a big topic, you know?
Which is why you get the officials out of it. It doesn't have anything to do with
yeah,
it.
Yeah, you're right.
Get the officials right out. Eric on the line. Eric, where are you calling from?
Hi, John. Hi, guys. I'm Eric from – I'm calling from France.
Like France, man. Like Paris, France, like across the ocean?
You get big fans over here.
Oh,
excellent.
Wow. That is excellent.
It's 1988, and I've lived for 2 years in Springville, so I know the place pretty well.
Excellent. Thanks for calling in, Eric. What's on your mind?
Comments about the Bills this year. So I believe you got the Big Five. By Big Five, I mean the owner, the Pegulas, great people, the GM, Doug Volley, who is running really quick, and he's making good moves. The head coach, obviously, reminds me much of Marv Levy. Mm. Like, he's a teacher, so are his coaches. And the players, no big splashes, mm-hmm. I mean. And obviously, the fans, people from Western New York, I love. And if you don't mind, I'd like to talk about the Raiders' move to Las Vegas, too.
Mm-hmm. Okay, one quick comment on that, Eric. Go ahead.
All right. Well, I just go for the two questions I have. What position in offense or defense is the most likely to adapt very quickly from college to NFL? So I will go for those kind of players in the draft.
Oh. What position is easiest, I think, is Eric's question, to adapt from college football to the NFL?
I would say line. Line play.
Really?
I would think
offensive
so.
Linemen playing in spread formation, they have issues.
I mean, they definitely have issues, but they play in spread. You're right, they have issues, but just line play in general over, like, guys who have to play the skill positions, because there's a lot more involved in that and a lot more learning that you have to do.
Off the top of my head, it's edge rusher.
I think. Edge rusher,
if
definitely.
You're an edge rusher in you college, you're getting it done. You can go. I mean, Shaq Lawson didn't practice for half a season or first, you know, preseason
right.
and first six games, and came in and he became a capable, competent edge rusher by the end of last
yeah.
year. With hopefully much more to come.
The biggest thing that those guys have to learn is sometimes being able to drop out and possibly bat a ball down or pick something off. But if you're an edge rusher in college and you're one of the top guys, they typically draft you to rush the quarterback. That's what they want you to do, and that's what you do when you get here to this league. So that's what I meant by line play. Even interior defensive linemen, I mean, those guys, they might play a little more stunts and games, and you might have to take on – maybe more double teams. But if you were a big-time defensive lineman in college, you were probably being double-teamed every single play, you know. So I think that defensive line is probably the easiest group to transition. Offensive line might have a little bit harder, but it depends on the position. If you're a tackle, you're a tackle. You're pretty much doing the same thing you did in college.
Interesting question from Eric calling all the way from France.
I got to say, that accent was refreshing.
You think it was legit?
I don't know.
Every caller is suspect. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know. I kept waiting for the other shoe to drop with that caller. We're going to come back. We're going to kind of recap some of Terry Pegula's comments from the owners' meetings when we return. Donald and I back with more of the John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy and Donald Jones live from One Bills Drive here in Orchard Park, where the NFL action took place in Phoenix, Arizona. Over the last few days, the NFL owners' meetings. Terry Pegula, Bills owner, met with the media last night in Arizona, talked about a variety of things. He talked about the relocation vote on the Raiders. The Bills, one of 31 NFL teams that voted yes. Go ahead, Raiders, move from Oakland to Las Vegas. And Terry Pegula talked about his vote and why he voted the way he did.
The Raiders vote was it 31-1?
Yeah.
I didn't vote against it, so I guess you know where I stood. It's an issue that it's a difficult issue because I know that the fans in Buffalo went through some hardship mentally, wondering what was going to happen to their franchise. So, but you know, these things happen.
Terry Pegula on his vote, his yes vote, a marked change from his predecessor Ralph Wilson, who voted against relocation, including Donald. And this predates you, obviously, but when the Browns moved from Cleveland to Baltimore and became the Baltimore Ravens, Mr. Wilson was clearly upset about it. And I think it kind of ruptured his longstanding friendship with Art Modell when he voted against it. You know, he stood by his guns. The Pegulas feel differently. As Terry said, it's, he understands the hardship for Oakland. But, you know, I guess, I don't know, where do you classify the Pegulas? New owners, a couple of years in now, are they new breed of owners? I don't know if I'd go that far. Are they old guard? Certainly not. I don't know if there is really an old guard of NFL owners left.
I mean, do you obviously there's still new owners. Do you want to come into this thing? And I don't know really where to classify them. Are they a new breed? I don't know. I think they look at the big picture and they look. You know, some people, even you, might say it's not a good look long term for the league. It might not be a good idea for them to go to Vegas. I think the league looks at it and says, "Man, this might be a great idea, a great thing for this league for them to end up in Vegas." Because they're going to have so many different events now there, including Super Bowls, many Super Bowls to come. And we talk about combines and things like that being in L.A., but now you have Vegas, which, you know, there are going to be so many different events and so much money made out there in Vegas. They look at the long-term money aspect for the league, and it works for them.
All right, another thing Terry Pegula discussed, it was the he was asked about the reports about Doug Whaley's future with the team, his working relationship with head coach Sean McDermott, and here's what Terry Pegula had to say about that yesterday, last night, when he met the media in Arizona.
We just spent the afternoon working together, the three of us. Those guys get along great. They've been making some key decisions, and they work well together.
When it comes time to make that pick at number 10 in the draft in a few weeks, whose final call will that be?
It's going to be a group effort.
Is that something where throughout the draft, every single pick will be a group consensus, or is it Doug making the final decision because he controls the 53? What would be the most accurate way to describe that?
I think the answer I just gave you, obviously when I say it's a group effort, it's just like everything else I think that most businesses do in their life. If somebody feels more strongly about something than somebody else, then maybe you lean in that direction, you know.
And Terry, Sean has talked about the one voice approach. Can you give us some background on your thoughts and the philosophy behind wanting to go this way? I assume maybe this was a decision made once when you hired Sean in January.
Well, it's a lot simpler to have one spokesperson for the organization. And when we sat in our coaching interviews this last go-around, we talked to all the candidates, and one of the things we were interested in, and Doug was in those meetings, is we wanted a coach who could be the face of our organization and that, you know, could step into that role.
Terry Pegula talking about Sean McDermott, Doug Whaley, kind of, I would hope, put to rest the speculation that the two don't get along. Only been a couple of months. I mean, if they can't get along after a couple of months, what are we talking about?
What are we talking about?
Come on.
That's like getting married and getting a divorce in like 3 months. I mean,
oh, I've heard of that.
It's happened. But you're like, the people from the outside, you're like, wait, what?
What happened?
Like, so you mean to tell me there were no issues before you got married? Like, what is going on?
Yeah, very early in their relationship. One more thing from Terry Pegula yesterday, and he talked about a variety of things. You can see the entire news conference, by the way, up on our website at buffalobills.com. But he was asked about the Bills' need for a new stadium. Is that real? There were reports about a year ago that the rest of the NFL, some owners anyway, were encouraging the Bills to get moving on a new stadium. And Terry Pegula talked about that. He talked about his position on whether a new stadium is needed and what the rest of the NFL thinks about Buffalo Stadium situation.
The state just got through with a rather expensive renovation on the stadium. I don't think it's our place to make demands and ask for things right now. We have a lease on our stadium till 2023. And, you know, we're looking forward to the football season and not talking about stadiums.
Terry, has the NFL still made it clear that they would like a new facility for the Buffalo Bills? Maybe not immediately after that lease is done, but sometime in the near future?
That hasn't been discussed in any kind of detail. Everybody knows we're new owners. We're a smaller market in the league, so we just need to be happy with what we have right now in our stadium and
Sean,
call it home. Let me make it clear that when I bought the Bills, I said I don't want to be talking about a stadium for the next 9 years. So I haven't thought about any of that stuff.
Terry Pegula, Bills owner, talking about stadiums. He points out a really good point we should remind ourselves. The current lease has seven more seasons to run, seven more years before it expires. That's a long time. Now, you don't want to wait too long. If you're going to build a new stadium, you don't want to get deep into it. But right, that's a long time, 7 years. And the stadium is in pretty good shape right now, too.
So the stadium is in pretty good shape. 7 years, we know it takes, like 3 or 4 years to build a new stadium. I would think this topic is going to come up in the next 3 or 4 years where you really start to talk about it and figure out what's going on. But, I mean, right now the team needs to start winning. And that's the biggest thing. Yeah. They need to win, because then if you win, then you can go to the state and say, okay, we have a winning team now, a team that's in the playoffs every year. We need a new stadium. If that's what we need a new stadium so that, you know, it's just a better environment for everybody else. But I don't know. I know there's so much talk about a stadium going downtown, but I don't think there's a better location than right here in Orchard Park. Parking-wise and everything.
Yeah, it seems to work. It has for decades. And the last thing Terry Pegula said, he said, I don't want to be talking about a stadium for the next 9 years. I had a discussion early on in his tenure as owner with him about this, and he said, you know, am I going to be asked about a stadium every time I speak publicly? He said, it's kind of, it was really funny. It stuck with me. He said, kind of like when you send your kids off to school, and now you call them up every night, you know, in their dorm room and say, are you going to pass? Are you going to pass? Are you going to pass? Are you going to pass every night? I mean, it does, I can see what his point is. It's kind of crazy, I think.
Now, the Bills would be right now, what, the only team? Everybody else has a fairly new stadium, right, in this league? I mean, Lambeau is old, but it's always going to be Lambeau.
Yeah, Soldier Field, they're older.
They've done big-time renovations, but, I mean, the Bills would
be
the only
big-time renovations here, too.
So, will we be talking about a new stadium at 2023?
Yeah.
You think so?
I don't know. Either
think it's
major
a serious consideration,
here,
though, or is it
now? No. Should we play
not
the soundbite over again?
In 2023, will that be a serious talk? We need a new stadium.
Yeah. Well, it will be a discussion. Do we need a new one, or do we fix this one? Sure. Before 2023, I'm sure. Seven years out.
Before.
Yeah. Hey, if you're interested in the 2017 season, you should know that you can take a crack at predicting how the schedule will play out. Our schedule challenge is up right now at BuffaloBills.com. It's a brief quiz. You take a short quiz about the Bills' 2017 schedule. Great prizes at stake, including club seat season tickets for the upcoming year, on-field passes for the home opener, an autographed helmet. Each question that you answer correctly counts as an entry. The 2017 Buffalo Bills Schedule Challenge presented by Ellicott Hotels. Play right now at BuffaloBills.com. We're back with more. One more hour to go. The John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Radio Network Sports Update.
We've got the update from One Bills Drive. The Bills Brain Trust wrapping things up at the NFL owners' meetings in Arizona. Terry Pegula, Bills owner, discussed the state of the team last night in a wrap-up news conference for him. He took great pains to dispel recent reports that Sean McDermott and Doug Whaley don't get along, and he instead raved about their working relationship that he has seen so far. He says these guys get along great. Pegula also said that the hardest part for him about being an NFL owner to date has been not delivering a winner for Bills fans. NFL fans will see what the league hopes is a quicker pace of play and fewer restrictions on the pace of play based on some of the rules changes approved. Owners passed several rules changes, adopting resolutions that they believe will speed up the game and improve player safety. They put off until May a decision to allow a little bit more creativity in on-field demonstrations. When the Las Vegas-bound Raiders... they will spend the next two seasons in Oakland, but they did talk. Mark Davis talked about maybe spending the third season. The 2019 season is there. That's not going to happen, according to the executive director of the Oakland Alameda County Coliseum. He said 2 years is enough. He said, I don't believe there's any appetite for a third season in Oakland. Roger Goodell mentioned yesterday that he will attend the Patriots home opener this year. Speaking at the league meeting, Goodell confirmed that he plans to attend the NFL kickoff game at Gillette Stadium in Foxborough. Jerry Jones, speaking at the meetings in Arizona yesterday, said his only timetable for a resolution on Tony Romo's future is before training camp. Buffalo Sabres wrapped up their back-to-back game set with the loss last night, a 3-1 loss in Columbus. Buffalo now with the defeat has been eliminated from playoff contention. Next game for the Sabres is not until Sunday when they are home against the Islanders. And just 3 days before hosting the World Championship, USA Hockey and the women's national team reached an agreement to end a wage dispute and avoid a boycott on home ice. The deal means players will be on the ice Friday in Plymouth, Massachusetts. The John Murphy Show with Donald Jones. We're live coming to you from One Bills Drive, Orchard Park, New York. And we've had our Twitter poll up based on something that Sean McDermott said yesterday. You are welcome to chime in on that on Twitter or on the telephone. The poll deals with McDermott's comments that the number two wide receiver is already on the Bills roster behind Sammy Watkins. What do you think about that? The Twitter poll, Sean McDermott said the Bills' number two wide receiver is on the roster. We've had 1,100 votes in so far. And right now, so far, 43% of you said it'll probably be Andre Holmes, wide receiver just signed a couple of weeks ago. 28% of you said it'll probably be Charles Clay, the number two receiver on the roster. 15% have somebody else in mind. 14% say it'll be Colby Listenbee. What do you think about that? 803-0550, the number, or toll-free 1-888-550-2550, or via Twitter at John Murphy Show. The number two wide receiver, if he is, in fact, on the roster, who are you guessing it might be? I don't know.
I look at this thing differently than a lot of people do. A lot of people, when they think number two receiver, they're thinking wide receiver position itself and not number two. Who's the number two person?
Right. Number two target, maybe?
Yeah, number two targets. I mean, for me, that's how I look at the number two receiver, because I look at certain teams as having guys who aren't even a receiver being their number one receiver. I mean, that's just how it is, you know. So I feel like Sammy's the number one. I do feel like the tight ends will be involved in this offense, whether it's just Charles Clay or another guy. I feel like both – they're going to have two tight ends that are involved in this offense, heavily involved in this offense. And I think the rest of the guys are competing for the number three in terms of target, number four in terms of targets. But if you want to talk about just the receiver position itself right now, I would have to go with a guy like Andre Holmes.
Yeah.
I do.
Maybe more to come, right? I mean, in the draft, perhaps. We talked about how McDermott's comments could be viewed as a draft smokescreen, so mm-hmm. that people don't know the Bills are interested in receivers. Maybe there's more to be added to the position. Maybe free agency. It doesn't seem like that would be the way to go. We had the caller earlier talking about Michael Floyd, who is out there in free agency, who has not attracted attention from anyone just yet, including the team he finished with, the New England Patriots. Sean McDermott talked about free agency a little bit yesterday when he met with the media in Arizona. Free agency winding down, and he was asked if the Bills came close to achieving the goals they set out to achieve when free agency began about 3 weeks ago.
When you look at free agency, very similar to the entire offseason to this point, Vic, with the way we were able to go after it inside the building first, and it really starts with Doug and his staff and then my staff and really the entire building. And to do what we were able to do at the time we were able to do it in free agency, in that process, that window, that's you don't do that on your own. So total team effort. The guys we were able to go after at that point as well with a very tactical approach, yet aggressive at the same time. We know we had to get out early and do some things. And feel really good about it at this point.
How tough was the situation when you got in with the salary cap and everything? You had to move a lot of pieces around. How tough was that?
Oh, listen, we're not going to make excuses. We are where we are, and we feel good about what we've done. Everything we're about is moving forward, and we feel good about the players that were on the roster, and then we were able to add critical pieces. In free agency, and so we're going to continue to try and do that through every avenue, whether it's the draft, continue to look at free agency, whatever it might be. We're going to try and improve this roster every way possible.
First part, I think the most interesting part of that, able to go after the free agents they wanted to. And look, we all knew what the score was in terms of The Bills not having a lot of cap room to make moves. They did make moves, and Sean McDermott kind of dishing out praise to everybody in the football department for doing what they could. We didn't expect a big splash. We didn't get a big splash, but I think there were some interesting signings there.
We kept saying we're not going to get a big splash here. Now, they did create some more space by letting some guys go, and we kept saying, like, they're going to have to create some space because right now they don't have the money to really do anything, and that's what they did. But I think he took the smart approach in getting the guys that he felt like fits this team best, the guys that he wants on his team personality-wise, a perfect fit for the systems that he's going to run. And he did it without doing a big splash, but he still got some key players. I mean, the biggest signing, obviously, was Micah Hyde. And I hope and I think that Micah Hyde is going to really play well for this team. We knew the safety position was something that we really needed. We talked about the defense and how bad it was last year up front and on the back end, but the back end was bad, especially after once you lost Aaron Williams, it was very bad back there. Then you decided that you didn't want to bring Aaron Williams back. You decided that you wanted to let Corey Graham go. Safety was a big need. And now you bring in Micah Hyde, who, you know, people might not have known of who he was, but he's a very good player. And I think it was a great signing. And I think the rest of the signings that they made were good as well.
McDermott's characterization of the Bills' approach to the first 2.5-3 weeks of free agency, it was a tactical approach, yet aggressive at the same time. And I think that's probably true. And Micah Hyde is the best example of it, you know, a guy that they knew would be out there. They went after. I think they signed him, a day after free agency opened, right? Yeah. It might have been the first day. March 9th, I think he was signed, day of free agency.
You know, people think that because you might not be actually signing guys, that they're not actually out there working and trying to sign guys. I mean, they're meeting with these players. They're trying to. They're making offers to different players. It doesn't work out. Players get better offers somewhere else. I mean, that's just how it goes. But don't think that because, they didn't sign this receiver. Well, they weren't going to pay a big, big money receiver anyway. They still were out there trying to find a good receiver at their price, at what they had to work with. It wasn't like they weren't. You know, they weren't out there working, trying to make things happen. I think they did a good job.
And part of what the Bills have done in free agency deals with, you know, that we talked for months. We talked about the 22, 23 unrestricted free agents they had on the roster. And look at what they've done with that list. They brought some back. Yes, Lorenzo Alexander came back. Colt Anderson came back. Brandon Tate, they re-signed. They had some restricted free agents they applied tenders to, Mike Gillisley and Ryan Groy.
Yeah.
They're both back. Gillisley has yet to sign his tender. Ryan Groy is here. Colton Schmidt, right, restricted free agent. Yep. They re-signed him. They've let a lot of guys go. And you mentioned about the guys that they let go. And this is aside from, let's look at the list. Reggie Bush, obviously he was not going to be back. Mm-hmm. Ahedebo is gone. Felton is gone. Dusable is gone. Percy Harvin is gone. Brandon Spikes. Robert Blanton. Zach Brown, he was in, hasn't signed. Stephon Gilmore is gone. Corey White is still available. Corbin Bryant.
Yeah.
Not re-signed here. It remains to be seen if he comes back. Doesn't look that way. Marquise Goodwin is gone. Chris Gregg, Justin Hunter. E.J. Manuel, Laurenti McRae, he signed somewhere else, didn't he, I believe? I can't remember.
Okay.
Jonathan Meeks, Jordan Mills came back. So
yep.
the list, the famous 22-23 that we talked about from December until free agency began, that got cut down pretty quickly by, you know, some tough decisions, but some pretty decisive and bold decisions, really, to let some of those guys go.
And that's
Zach
what
Brown,
coaches...
we sat on the show and said, well, obviously they're going to have to bring back Zach Brown. No, it's not that obvious. It probably won't happen.
And you never know. You never know what they're thinking. Even the players that are on the roster now, like you never know what they're thinking going through camp, going through everything. You still might see a guy get cut where it was like, wait, they just cut who? I mean, that's just how this league works. A new staff comes in, they evaluate everybody on the team, and they decide, okay, this person is a fit for our team personality-wise and scheme from the team, from the previous regime or whatever. And then they decide the rest of these guys are not a perfect fit. They're not a good fit for this team. We wish them the best of luck, but they have to move on. And now they go out, they deal with the money that they have, they make the right signings without having to make a big splash. I don't know if Coach Sean McDermott is the type of guy that will ever make a big splash. I mean, he just doesn't seem like that type of coach. We're going to make a big splash because everybody wants us to make – I don't think he's ever going to do that.
Still some moves to make. By my count, the Bills have 61 on the roster right now. They'll go to camp with right about 90, you would think. They have 6 draft picks. They have rookie free agents to sign. So, you know, there's some room there to add some guys that don't count against the cap, those low-salary guys. But they have some moves to make. maybe a couple of veterans in the next, you know, in the weeks or so with the draft just about a month away. Donald mentioned, and he's right about Micah Hyde, though. It was a targeted signing. It was an aggressive signing. Mm-hmm. Came on the first day of free agency. And Sean McDermott talked about that, his opinion on Micah Hyde and how he might fit in here with the Buffalo Bills.
When you look at Micah's skill set and really the entire class of free agents that we were able to bring in, number one, he's a good person off the field, and that was big. The character side of it was big for us, knowing that he was a team captain on special teams for the Packers. And then the versatility, toughness. You know, I remember watching Mike over the years just on TV. So, and watching him play different positions, whether it was nickel, safety, corner, and then his role in special teams was a big like for us.
Is he a guy that will do all those things for you, or do you right now have him pegged in somewhere where you think he fits best among all those roles?
You know, as coaches, we're going to put him in a position to be successful, and so that's our job. And having said that, he's going to start at the safety position, and then we'll get flexible once he understands the system.
Sean McDermott talking about Micah Hyde, who, you know, as we said, it's a I don't know if it's under the radar signing, because even some of the national observers we've talked to on the show over the last week have mentioned that as a pretty good signing. But it's not a splash signing. It's not like, whoa, the Bills got Micah Hyde. I think it's viewed in many quarters as a kind of an aggressive, smart move for a guy who will step in and play right away. I think Micah Hyde made that pretty clear when we talked to him on the show last week.
I think that was you had to be aggressive with Micah Hyde, because, like you said, it's not a big splash move, but everybody – national news knows who Micah Hyde is, and it's the same with these coaches in these different organizations. Somebody would have paid him, and somebody would have got him to come into their building, and they wouldn't have let him get out of this building. And so they were aggressive in what they did, and you know, they ended up reeling him in, and they did a good job at that. Even with the signing of, or the matching of Groy, you know, we sat up here and was like, man, they need to really – first we went back and forth like, dude, should you – go to the wall and try to bring Groy back? I don't know if you want to do that. And then when we thought about it, it was like, man, you're talking about a guy who can be a starter. First of all, a key backup on your line, but can be a starter in the next years to come, depending on what's going to happen with your guys who you have starting right now at a cheaper price. I mean, that's what you want. And so everything that they did, it seems like they're thinking future and not just this year. And that's what everything, when Sean McDermott was first hired, everything he said and everything that Doug Whaley said was, we want to build a sustainable team, a team that's in the playoffs every single year. We're not just trying to make the playoffs this year to end the drought. And it feels like the signings that they made in free agency, that's what they were doing, thinking future.
The roster still has some holes, however, including at cornerback. I happen to believe today, a month out of the draft, that it's going to be corner when they go in the first round. But we'll see. There's only five corners on the Buffalo Bills roster right now. Ronald Darby, Charles Gaines, Leonard Johnson, Marcus Roberson, and Kevon Seymour, the second-year player. And McDermott talked about Kevon at the media breakfast yesterday. Sean McDermott talking about second-year player Kevon Seymour and how he fits into the Bills' defensive plans.
He wasn't a guy, honestly, that I knew a lot of before entering the doors at one Bills Drive. But, man, what an athlete in terms of just the length. And that's really the way the corner position is moving. And when you look at Kevon, he played some inside. He played at the nickel position, right? He played outside, and yet he was physical. And as a rookie, I thought, just watching the tape, he really handled himself well. And then the mental toughness part. You know, there was plays where they caught a ball on him, but he came back the next play and hit the reset button and really fired on all cylinders. So that, for a rookie to be able to do that, man, that was huge. And so that's a nice foundation in year one. Yeah. Well, you know, I don't know. I mean, just it's like, are you a zone or you're a man? And I just want good football players, you know? It's like, I'm bald, right? So what was my wife looking for? You know, it's like, she want a bald guy or she want a guy with hair? I don't know. She just found maybe the best guy she could find, right? So I wouldn't classify as zone versus man. I just say, hey, we're going to try and find the best football players we can, Mike, and then adapt our system. If we've got great man corners in those buckets, then we'll play man every play if we have to. If that's what they're good at, that's what we'll do. You know, you just adjust.
Are there certain physical thresholds you look for at the corner position? Arm length, height, things like that?
I would say that there's things you look at critical factor-wise, yes, at every position. You know, there is things. Speed is important. You know, you look at the way Ronald can run and that speed and his background with that. So, and then just like every position, the toughness element. It's nice to be out there and be able to run, but this is not track practice. You know, this is football, and so we got to be able to be physical and tackle, and so that's a big part of it for us. And our identity, as you guys have heard me say before, and I'm going to continue to say, our identity will be built on defense around our corners and their tackling ability, and then how much our defensive line runs to the football. I mean, those to me are big selling points for our defense.
Sean McDermott, Bills head coach at the NFL owners meetings in Arizona yesterday. I'm glad we're dipping into this today because we got the headlines yesterday, you know, the stuff about number two receiver, the stuff about linebackers, et cetera. But, again, more clues provided by the head coach as to where they're going, what they're thinking. Two things from the discussion about Kevon Seymour in the corners. Number one, at the tail end there when he talked about how our defense, I think he's saying this, our defense will be defined by how well our corners tackle and how well our defensive line runs to the ball. I like that. I like to hear that. It indicates, A, that they're probably going to lean to zone, right, if the corners are involved and mm-hmm. run support, and B, that he has something in mind of what he wants this defense to look like. The other thing is when he talks about zone or man, you know, he said it doesn't make that much difference to him if they have corners who are better suited to play in man defense to play it. I immediately thought, is that something that belongs in our fake news, real news thing? But I believe him, though, kind of. You know, I believe that he probably if it turns out, and Darby is still a work in progress, clearly.
Yes.
Kevon is definitely a work in progress. Who knows who else winds up on this roster?
If you draft one, it's definitely a work in progress.
Yeah, rookie will definitely. So we'll see. I think sometimes we may get too locked into this is the style of defense they'll play. This is who they are. We don't know yet. That a smart coach, like McDermott is, I believe, will let that sort of evolve, I believe.
I mean, the best coaches have to adjust with the talent that you have on the roster, you know. And in this league, people say, well, you know, first of all, it takes time for him to get the players. Even if these guys weren't the type of corners that he wants, it's going to take time for him to get his players if he just wanted to play zone. So in the meantime, he has to be able to adjust and say, okay, we're going to play man until I can get my guys in here, mm-hmm. and we're going to be a good man team. I don't know if that's the case. I think he would say, you know what, these guys are smart enough where they can transition into being zone corners. We've never really seen him play man, and Leslie Frazier, we know, was never really a man type of guy. So I would think that he's just saying, listen, I want the best, the smartest football players that can transition, know and understand everything that's going on, and we can make them zone corners. We know they can play man. Now we're just going to teach them how to play zone.
What did you make of his joke about his wife and his baldness? I mean, is he saying his wife chose him because he's bald? Does anybody do that?
Maybe. Maybe. I mean, people are picky and especially in relationships. Like, he's bald. He has hair. I don't know if I want a bald guy. I want a guy with hair. I mean, people are really that picky.
Yeah.
You have other people that say, you know what? Whatever. I don't care. Whatever.
That's what McDermott was saying. It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
Hair, it doesn't matter. We talked about the numbers at corner. What did I say? Five corners on the roster. There are only three quarterbacks on the roster. You would think the Bills have some additions to make there. Obviously, Tyrod Taylor, Cardale Jones, and the first-year player from Liberty University, Josh Woodrum. Three quarterbacks on the roster right now. And at the owners' meeting yesterday morning, Sean McDermott was asked about the quarterback situation and his thoughts on how Cardale Jones, going into his second year, might fit into all of this.
Well, when you start with the quarterback position and you look at the guys that we have there with Tyrod and with Cardale, I mean, Cardale's got a big arm. And so you start there and you say, hey, he's won before. He's won in big moments, won in big games. And so yet at the same time, he's a young quarterback, and we have to develop. That's part of a coach's job is to develop our players. And so we feel good about it at that position. Yet at the same time, we're going to look at every option and explore every avenue to improve this football team, whether it's the draft or free agency or waiver claims, whatever it is, we're going to look to improve this roster.
Sean, how excited are you on Zach Fitzpatrick?
No, we're not going to. I mean, everything's on the table. There's nothing off the table at this point. I mean, you guys will get a feel for me, and I've said this before. I'm pretty methodical and research-based, and so, you know, I'm in Doug's office, he's in my office, and what if this, what about that? And you just have those conversations, those healthy conversations, And that's what makes it fun.
Sean, does the quarterback need to be like the starting quarterback? I mean, where are you coming from in Carolina? Derek Anderson, Cam Newton, not really the same kind of players.
Yeah, that's a great question. What's your name?
Darren.
Darren, I think you would find probably split 50-50 in terms of opinion on that with regards to, hey, he's got to be the same style quarterback. In Carolina, we had a different style quarterback. So defensively looking at it as a coordinator over the last 6 years in Carolina, you say, hey, you know, if you have two different types, it kind of makes you prepare a little bit for two different guys. And then if you had the same, you know, they don't lose a step if the first guy goes out. So it's probably just a 50-50 split. For me, myself, I would say you find the best player possible to improve your football team.
Interesting comments from Sean McDermott on the quarterback mix. You know, we've had some people call up the show and say things like that, like Deshaun Watson fits in because he's a little bit like Tyrod Taylor, so that's how he would fit in. But I think as McDermott points out, you don't really look at it like that. Let's get the best players
in.
Right?
Yeah.
You have to.
That's exactly what you have to do. You have to get the best players that you feel like can fit your scheme, guys that might be able to, you know, transition into another scheme. I mean, that's the smartest players, the guys that can make plays, regardless if this is the same type of quarterback. I mean, that doesn't really make sense.
No.
You find the best quarterback out there. If Tyrod Taylor is your guy, then that's your guy. You get a backup. The backup doesn't necessarily have to be the same type of guy as Tyrod Taylor.
One more issue from McDermott yesterday. You know, I'm having so much fun with this, we might do this again tomorrow with different sound bites. Because there's a lot here. If you're a Bills fan, it's really
the first time
he's opened the window into kind of what they're thinking. He didn't lay it all out there for everybody.
Right.
Wouldn't expect him to do that. But if you're paying attention, there's a lot here. Sammy Watkins, what's the latest? And what's his impression of Sammy Watkins, who missed 8 games last season with a foot? Kind of gutted it out, finished the season, then went off and had surgery again. So an update on Sammy Watkins. Here's what Sean McDermott had to say yesterday.
Yeah, I had a chance to sit down with Sammy the other day. I was impressed. You know, he's on schedule with his rehab, no setbacks. He's fired up about this season, and what a dynamic receiver. And then you look at what we were able to do with free agency and adding players to that position group, and Andre and the different guys there with Philly and Jeremy, and I mean that's going to be a fun group to watch throughout really the whole off season and preseason. So, and then the special teams qualities and characteristics that those young men bring to the table, and so I love the toughness of that group, and I look forward to watching Sammy when he gets back on the field.
Is there a magic formula keeping him healthy?
Well, just, you know, he's attacking that rehab process, and that's the start. And so, you know, we're looking forward to having him back.
Should there be any doubt that this picture obviously
will be picked up? Yeah, we're looking at it, you know, Mike, and just like we look at everything. Next couple of weeks will be big for that as we move forward.
Sean McDermott talking about the receiving core. 9 receivers currently on the Buffalo Bills roster. That's a lot. You don't want to go to camp with many more than that, right? How many more are you going to bring to camp?
I feel like when I was here, we had like 11 or 12 or something like that, you know. And I remember when I first got here, Lee Evans and Roscoe Parrish looked at that, and they were like, oh, we can kind of relax now.
You know?
And yeah, because that's what veterans do in this league.
Was that the year Lee got cut?
This was my first year.
Okay.
This was my first year. And Roscoe would be like, oh, man. My hamstring. And it's like, Roscoe, come on, man. Like, there's nothing wrong with the hamstring. Like, he's like, oh, go ahead, take those reps. And that's how the veterans do. Receivers run a lot. Receivers and DBs run a lot during camp. And so you really can never have enough of those guys.
Well, maybe they'll add 1 or 2, right?
I would think so.
Before camp. They have, the familiar names, obviously, Watkins, Brandon Tate, just had him on the show the other day, signed to a contract. A lot of people interested in Colby Listenby, draft pick from a year ago, 6th-round draft pick from a year ago. Des Lewis coming back, still on the roster. There are other names, young guys added to the roster that maybe people haven't heard of or are familiar with. Among them, Philly Brown, the 3-year veteran who comes over to the Buffalo Bills. Jeremy Butler, we had him on the show just the other day. Jeremy Butler is on the Buffalo Bills roster now, who's got a couple of years of experience in the league. Corey Washington on the roster now, 2nd-year player out of Newberry. Andre Holmes, we talked with him, the former Raider, and then Brandon Tate. So they have picked up those 5 in free agency. They have a total of 9. And when you see, and when you know they have 9, Donald, maybe that's what leads Sean McDermott to say, yeah, the number 2 receiver is already on our roster. He's thinking, How many more are we going to bring?
Yeah, you know? I think he will still add another one or two. Definitely one, maybe two in the draft. And they're going to go to camp with 11. I mean, you still have rookie mini camps and things that you have to get through. And a lot of these receivers are not nowhere near being rookies. And so you need to have enough guys that can get you through these different sessions. That's why you have so many. That's why we talk about even the quarterback position. Yeah, you're going to have three or four quarterbacks. You need guys to help you get through camps.
Yeah. A call from Nick on Grand Island who has a thought on receivers. Nick, go ahead. Thanks for waiting.
Hi, John. Thanks for taking my call. So when I was thinking about it when I was driving into work, but I think they're going to go wide receiver at 10 or trade down. And when they say the number two wide receivers on the roster, I think they could be talking about either Charles Clay or even LeSean McCoy as a dark horse. But when I look at the offense running Carolina, they got two big receivers in Kelvin Benjamin and Devin Funchess, and I think Williams fits that mold perfectly. I don't know if you can necessarily throw Andre Holmes or Philly Brown into a guy in a role of a number two receiver who hasn't had ever more than 30 or 40 catches in a season, but that's just my two cents on the issue.
Yeah, Nick, I feel you where you're coming from on that, but, you know, to bring a rookie in here and say he's going to catch 40 or 50 balls in a season and be your number two guy when he's never played in an NFL season is tough too, you know. Even a guy as physical as Mike Williams, you don't know if that guy can hold up throughout the course of a season. He has to come in here and prove that he can be a number two receiver. It's not just about having – like, you have to be consistent in practice and all through camps, all through training camp for them to say – and then in the preseason games for them to say, okay, you are the number two receiver. So just because you're drafted high does not mean that you are automatically that guy. It's just – it can't work like that. If it works like that, then something is wrong with that coach and that organization.
Marv Levy, this goes back. I know, I acknowledge that. Marv Levy used to say that receivers typically take a little bit longer than many other position groups to get acclimated to the NFL game. Does that still hold true in today's game? I mean, there have been rookie receivers made a big splash.
Oh, yeah. It's rookie receivers that will make a big splash, but it does take a little time because – when you get into this league, the only thing that you hear is how fast it is. This game is a lot faster than it is in college. And you see that once you get to camp. You see guys moving faster. But it's not because everybody is faster. It's because guys are smarter. And so once you get here, you have to understand, okay, I have to move faster but have patience at the same time as a receiver. It's not an easy thing to really figure out. Plus, everything is moving so fast, you have to know how to read defenses. There's a lot that you really have to learn, and it's hard for these college receivers to do that.
And when you've talked about Corey Davis versus Mike Williams, and you've made this point, I think, pretty well over the last several weeks, there's a certain amount of precision that goes into being an NFL receiver that is not necessary in college football. Even at the highest levels of college football, it's not necessary to be as precise when it comes to running routes and you know, all the little things, you know, beating press coverage, all that stuff that you don't really see in college.
You don't see it in college because in college you have more blown coverages. Guys are wide open in college. And a guy like Mike Williams can just out-physical any other corner at that level. I mean, he was playing in the ACC. He was more physical than the rest of these guys. But once you get here and these corners are the same size as you and they're just as physical as you and they're smarter so they know how to break on the ball – and you're not coming in and out of your breaks fast enough, well, guess what? Pick six every single time, and you can't play for us now. I mean, there's nothing – you can't just say you're not the fastest guy. You're not Randy Moss, so you're not taking the top off of a defense. You're not even Sammy Watkins fast. And so you're not going to be the guy that you say, okay, we want you to just go deep every single time. So if you're not that guy, we need you to be able to run routes. Mike Williams hasn't shown that he can do that yet.
Each and every day, Donald and I do this show. We have no problem coming up with fake news items, stuff that is just strains credibility. And we're going to look at some of those items when we return and let you know what we think. Is it fake? Is it real? Fake news! It's out there. We're going to talk about it when we return. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Oh, we're back. Donald Jones, John Murphy.
I guess so.
I guess we're back. Live on the air from One Bills Drive. I assume we're back now. I got people calling that into question. We're back for the next half hour. You're welcome to join us. The phone line's open, 803-0550, toll-free, 1-888-550-2550. When you come back from a break and somebody says in your ear, no, that's my bad, what do you think? Like, we're not back?
We're not back.
I assume now we're back. Cameras moving, stuff going on. Hey, Donald, this came across on Twitter, which has got my attention, and I'm concerned about this. We're just about ready to get into fake news, real news, but Stephanie tweets in, I listen to the show every day, but lately it sounds like you, me, are annoyed with Donald Jones. Stephanie wants to know, what's going on? Do you feel that? I'm not annoyed with you.
What's going on?
I'm not annoyed with you at all, Stephanie. I'm not annoyed with you, Donald Jones.
I think
Jones.
I need to buy you some roses or something like that.
Seriously, you kiss and make up on the air? Of course I'm not annoyed. There's no rift between us. We've worked together pretty well for the last 6 or 7 months. There's no rift. This is not a marriage that is not going to be for the long haul here, as was reported about some other One Bills Drive.
Exactly.
Come on, Stephanie.
Yes, that's everything. That's what's happening at One Bills Drive. Nobody's getting along here. And so, I guess, work relationships that have been working together for 6 or 7 months or 2 or 3 months, 3 or 4 months, it's just not working out. We need to split everybody up.
By the way, when you say something that I think I don't agree with, I'm going to tell you, Stephanie.
Right.
And Donald, you know.
That's what we're supposed to do.
Right. And you say a lot of things that of course not. We're getting along. It sounds like you're annoyed. I'm not annoyed with anybody.
I think we're all right.
The one thing that annoys me is fake news. That's a segment we do now every day on the show. Fake news. It's out there. You can't escape it. We've been surrounded by fake news. And we want to talk about fake news, real news. It is sponsored by Yancey's Fancy, New York's artisan cheese. Reports that are out there that are fake. And I want to start with something that I guess we got onto yesterday. Turns out it was fake, Donald, mostly because of a misunderstanding. And here's the mechanics of it. We did not, because of the timing, we did not get a chance to hear Sean McDermott's comments yesterday before we actually aired them. So we heard Sean McDermott say something yesterday about the linebacking group and about Reggie Ragland, the second-year man. We took it and ran with it, not understanding what he meant. It was the part about Reggie Ragland. He said, here's what the transcript says. He says, we'll start at the middle linebacker position on Reggie Ragland. Interpreted that incorrectly as thinking, oh, Reggie Ragland's going to start at middle linebacker position. No. Upon further review and after watching the tape we went under the hood while it's still there and decided that what he meant was Reggie Ragland will start at the middle linebacker position. Not that he'll start, game one. He's a starter, right. But that's where he will start when it comes to his position at middle linebacker. So that's on us, but it is fake news. We'll take it. Reggie Ragland is a Bills starting middle linebacker. False. It is false. What we meant to say, and we misunderstood last week, what is fake about it is that what really the interpretation is that Sean McDermott says Reggie Ragland will start his reps at middle linebacker.
Fake as well. Well, what you're saying, Murph, is that we are, one of those or two of those reporters that will take stuff and run with it and not do our own research. What it sounds like.
You're right. We weren't there. You're right.
No, but, in many camps, and which is where he's going to start his reps, usually in mini camp and in training camp, they will move guys around. They want to see, and even guys that have been on this team for a while, they want to see you move around because they need to figure out what else can you do. Can we play you? If somebody goes down right here, can we bump you over to play that position? That's what happens in mini camp. So you'll see a lot of guys playing out of position during mini camp. And you're like, why is he playing there? It sounds like that's what they're doing with Reggie. They are going to play him at middle linebacker. He's going to play some outside linebacker. They want to see where he can play and where he can have a good role in this team and be an impact player on this roster. So that's what you're going to see with Reggie Ragland.
We got deep into it yesterday, and that's my fault. I mean, I ask you, how would Preston respond to this? Well, there's nothing to respond to.
Right.
It is fake news. Reggie Ragland is not the Bills starting middle linebacker. He will start his reps at middle linebacker.
Sorry, Preston.
We'll
be upset.
Sorry, fans. We misinterpreted that. I feel bad about that. Fake news, real news. That was fake, and that's on us. Fake news, real news. Richard Sherman said it, a week or two ago, that Colin Kaepernick was being blackballed by NFL teams, that he did not have a job. The commissioner was asked about it yesterday. He denied it. Colin Kaepernick, is he, in fact, being blackballed by NFL teams? Fake news, real news. I'm going to say fake, Donald. What about you?
I'm going to go with fake. I mean, to blackball somebody, first of all, you have to, get together and collude and say, listen, nobody here will pick up this guy. I don't think that's what's going on. I just think that each one of these owners, each one of these franchises, the GMs and the coaches, look at Colin Kaepernick as a quarterback who he can't really help them right now. I mean, he hasn't played good in however many seasons, 2 or 3 seasons. And so why do you bring a guy onto your roster who has not played well, first of all, Add to that that he has all types of baggage off the field with everything. He's going to bring all types of media, you know, scrutiny because you picked this guy up, and you don't want to deal with that with a guy who's probably not able to help your team. So I think that's what's going on. He's just not a good quarterback at this point.
Yeah, he's not being blackballed. He can't help. And maybe somebody will sign him as we move down the line. I mean, we talked about the money about Kaepernick the other day.
That's another issue.
It's going to be $11 or $12 million he was scheduled to make. I read something, I think, yesterday that said, well, he was hoping to get a deal worth $9 million. No, that's not going to happen for
Colin
Kaepernick.
That is not going to happen. That is not going to happen.
Yeah, he's not being blackballed. He's got to come get his price in line with what his value is right now.
Right. Just understand, like, dude, you're not going to make this type of money. You're not playing up to that type of standard. And so you need to go ahead and get in line with where you're playing. Maybe then somebody will take a chance on you, and you can prove that you can play. And maybe you had signed a one-year deal or something. And if you prove that you can play, maybe then you'll get paid that type of money. But until then, it's just not going to happen.
We move on in terms of quarterbacks for fake news, real news. Fake news, real news. Geno Smith, former Jet, signed last week with the New York Giants. Ben McAdoo, the head coach of the Giants, at the owners' meetings yesterday, he said he was asked about Smith potentially being the long-term replacement for Eli Manning. And the quote from Ben McAdoo says, I can't see why not. Ben McAdoo said, you study the guys coming out. Geno, I think he's right in the mix of one of the better players available this year. Geno Smith, formerly of the Jets, now with the New York Giants. Can he really be a franchise quarterback for the New York Giants? I think that's fake. We've seen a lot of Geno Smith over the first 4 years of his career. I don't think he has in it. He has it in him to be a franchise quarterback anywhere, including the New York Giants. And no, I don't think he's a potential replacement for Eli Manning someday.
So I'm going to have to go with, this is fake news, everybody. Now, when we first talked about this in the office, I was like, can I come up with an argument for real news? And I was trying to think about it, and I was trying to think about Eli and what people, I grew up a Giants fan coming from New Jersey, and what people feel about Eli throughout his entire career. And you do have a lot of fans that are like, man, Eli is terrible. He's won his Super Bowls a lot because they've had good defenses. He's had some good receivers. But you do have fans that think that. But even as bad as those fans feel like Eli Manning is, Geno Smith is worse, in my opinion. Like, he's just not anywhere near a franchise quarterback. And so I don't think that Geno Smith will be the successor to Eli Manning or could be the successor to Eli Manning. He's just not good enough.
Not going to happen. All right, fake news, real news. It is presented by Yancey's Fancy New York's Artisan Cheese. Donald and I back with more in a moment. The John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts. We are live at One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
The John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And now, what have we learned from today's show?
It's presented by Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security and home theater, the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. What have we learned? We heard a lot from Terry Pegula today, the owner of the Buffalo Bills. His comments yesterday, last night, at the NFL owners' meetings in Phoenix, Arizona. And Terry Pegula talked about the new stadium discussion for the Buffalo Bills. Here's what he had to say.
The state just got through with a rather expensive renovation on the stadium. I don't think it's our place to make demands and ask for things right now. We have a lease on our stadium till 2023, and we're looking forward to the football season and not talking about stadiums. Everybody knows we're new owners. We're a smaller market in the league, so we just need to be happy with what we have right now in our stadium.
Terry Pegula talking about stadium discussion for the Buffalo Bills. Also today, we talked with Jamie Eisenberg, who is the lead and senior fantasy football reporter for CBSSports.com. He thinks that fantasy owners should keep an eye on Sammy Watkins after Eisenberg's discussion with Sean McDermott out west at the owners' meeting. He thinks Watkins bears watching for fantasy owners as we head towards the season.
From the fantasy perspective, these are the type of players you look for that can be difference makers for you, because people will overlook them after they've been burned a couple of times, and that's really been the case with Watkins, going back to last year, investing somewhat of a high draft pick in him, and then the foot problem creeping up. So I think if he falls in your draft, he's going to be in that round 4, round 5 range. If he plays 13-plus games, as we saw 2 years ago, he could be an absolute monster.
Jamie Eisenberg on Sammy Watkins. One news note came out just a couple of minutes ago from here at One Bills Drive. Scott Crichton, the defensive lineman they picked up the other day, the Bills announced today that he has been designated as waived, failed physical. Scott Crichton, defensive end. I think he had a concussion last year. He was picked up off waivers the other day from the Minnesota Vikings. Scott Crichton waived today by the Buffalo Bills. They had him in for a physical. He failed the physical, and so he's been released.
That's tough. That's tough. I've been there where you go to another team and you fail a physical. You're excited about being picked up, but then you can't pass the physical. I mean, that's tough. So hopefully, you know, going down, moving forward, he can get his concussions and everything together. And I hope the best for him moving forward.
Got a good show coming up tomorrow, we think, including Mike Pereira, the Fox NFL rules guru, the former vice president of officiating in the NFL. Mike Pereira joins us tomorrow at 2. We'll go through some of these rules changes announced yesterday by the NFL. Want to thank our presenting sponsor, Napa Auto Parts. Find your local Napa store online at NapaOnline.com. Our Entercom board op is Ryan Gates. Production assistance from J.J. Torito, George Blass, Jeff Koltnick, Thomas Hollander, James Donovan, our producer, Jay Harris. Don't celebrate now. We're back tomorrow at noon with the John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.